after I've been drowned in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, Donna Cooper, senior fella with the economic policy team at the American Progress Action Fund, going to be here talking about transportation, how we fund it, how we get people back to work, and the priorities that the right wing has chosen over doing just that. Do we cut funding for folks through the LIHEAP program so granny freezes over the winter, or do we have big handouts to oil companies? Priorities. What are the priorities going forward? Who are the Republicans standing and fighting for, and who are they not? Interesting conversation with her. Laura Clausen from Daily Kos, the labor page, going to be here talking about everything that is labor, the stories of the day. Interesting there. Of course, Stuart Akoff, good friend of the program, chief of staff and assistant to the president at the United Utility Workers Union of America, going to be here talking about the SB5 fight in Ohio. Stuart is on the ground as we speak in Ohio, like a lot of people. And I mean, there are a lot of Republicans who are coming forward and saying, you know what, this is a bad bill. We need to repeal this SB5, which is issue number 2 there in, well, I mean, really it is kind of number 2, if you stop and you really think about it. I'm hoping that they repeal this next week. I'm hoping. We'll talk to Stuart about that. Also in the third hour, Bob Lennox will be here, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 495. Victory, victory, victory. You know, we've had Bob on the program a couple of times talking about the BMW situation where, you know, these guys have worked for this BMW logistics company, you know, where they send out parts and they do a whole bunch of warehousing. BMW wanted to ship that out. They wanted to farm it out to a third party. Didn't happen because the union stood up, fought back, brought in community groups, political groups, people from across the country, across the globe. And they have got a 9.5-year deal. So it'll be interesting to talk to Bob and see how that all happened. I want to give props out to the occupation folks who have driven the banks back into their hole. Last night we talked about Bank of America dropping their fees on people who use debit cards as long as they have, you know, a bank account with a certain amount of in the account, a certain deposit, whether they use one of their credit cards or if they have a check deposited through direct deposit. That was how you got out of it yesterday. Today, Bank of America has dropped all plans to charge its customers the $5 a month to use the debit card. And what you've seen is you've seen all the big banks run away from it. Now is not the time to give in. This Saturday is bank transfer day, make the big banks pay day, however you want to put it, the day you move your money out. Don't wait another day. I'm a big fan of credit unions. I'm a big fan of small local banks. Hopefully we use this opportunity to our advantage. And you know what? Drive a stake in this. Say, look, you know, we're gonna punish you for what you've done. That's simple. Yesterday, of course, was Halloween. The kids had a great time going out trick-or-treating. And as I said, sadly, the economy's tough. But that didn't stop our governor from taking the day off from doing some work. Again, you know, people are out of work. But he did have a nice day ginning himself up, putting on a little pancake makeup as Dracula. So, you know, as I saw this, I'm kind of like, is he listening to the show? Are you listening, Tom? Because I think, you know, I think we talked about him being Dracula yesterday. Blood-sucking, spineless, cold-hearted. And there's a picture of a child there. And the headline was, you know, the Corbetts give kids a spook. And I'm not worried about being afraid. What they should really be afraid of is the loss of opportunity, the loss of an education. Whether they got a piece of candy or not doesn't bother me. What bothers me is the $900 million plus that has been taken out of public education. What bothers me is this whole move to privatization. That bothers me. And that should scare every person, not just on Halloween, but every day of the year. So I don't know if you saw the pictures, but they're out there. They spent the whole day dolling up the governor's mansion with spider webs and the whole nine yards. And I guess, you know, somebody maybe needed a job. Maybe someone made the spider web. I would say it probably came from China, because I know, I'll guarantee our governor didn't look very hard where it was made. Anyway, I don't know if you saw this story that came out. Evidently, Congress is wealthier. And how are you doing? I mean, how's average everyday America doing? The numbers I see is we're pretty stagnant. In fact, going down, but I look at the numbers in Congress, well, they've seen a 25% increase in their net worth over the year 2008, according to the folks over at Roll Call. It was 1.65, now it's up to $2 billion. And what I find interesting, and people over at the American Enterprise Institute pointed this out, that the 50 richest members of Congress accounted for 78% of the net worth of all of the institution. So, you know, there's part of me going, maybe they should have an Occupy Congress. Because even among the richest of the rich, you're seeing a massive gulf between one group and the other. The top 50 had a total in 2008 of $1.2 billion. Of the $1.65 billion, in 2010, they had 80% of the wealth, 1.63 of the $2.04 billion. So, again, as you look at it, you've got this divide even there. 219 members of Congress officially in the millionaire class with investable assets of worth more than $1 million. And if you look at the numbers of overall of Congress, you know, everybody lumped into one big group. Each member was worth about $3.8 million. If you look at the nation as a whole, the average, the mean, that means everybody into one pot and you add them up and divide them. For the average household, $500,000 was that number. So in Congress, $3.8 million was the mean. The general populace overall, 500,000. So you're seeing a massive difference between them and, of course, us. You take that number away, it's a lot different. In fact, the net worth, the median net worth, was about 513,000 when you take away the top and the bottom, somewhere in the middle. Those, you and me, about 100 grand. The richest man in Congress this year beat out Daryl Issa, a guy named Michael McCaul, $294 million with an M, $294 million. And you look at this and you go, exactly how did they get that way? So this Alan Zabrowski, a professor from Georgia State University, he's done a whole bunch of studies on congressional investment patterns. And guess what? They do better than you and I do. And gee, I wonder why that is. According to Professor Zabrowski, he says, there is no doubt in my mind that they are trading in some way on information that is there. Do you think? You know, I think back to some of the first legislation that came out, especially I think it was the Patriot Act that came out, that gave any vaccine company pretty much a pass, an absolute pass. Go ahead, do what you got to do. And their entire staff bought stock. So as soon as all those lawsuits were off their back, their stock shot through the roof and the entire office, a bunch of millionaires. Is that insider trading? Is it legal? Well, it's illegal. I think it's unethical. I think it should be illegal. And if I remember right, there was a Democratic congressman who wanted to make that illegal. but it didn't go very far. And why? Well, I think the numbers spoke for themselves. So Rick Perry was out and about talking about education, talking about Occupy Wall Street. And what's interesting, he was doing it at a University of Phoenix event, probably one of the biggest for-profit universities in the country. And he was talking about income inequality. And, you know, I guess I just have to play the clip because I almost can't imagine that he would actually say this. But here's what Rick Perry said.
You know, we have young people who today are occupying Wall Street. That, you know, there are some people out there that are making too much money. And if somebody were to ask me what's the best advice that I could give them, excuse me, it would be that money's probably the most highly overrated thing in the world from the standpoint of really being happy with your life. Good to have some, because I've been without, and I've had some, and it's better to have some.
It's better to have some. Yeah, it's better to have some. Yeah, yeah. Here's a guy worth $2.8 million. Better to have some. But it's highly overrated. You know, tell all those kids who are saddled with tens of thousands of dollars in generational debt. Tell the families who are underwater in their mortgage. Tell the families who have lost their jobs and are now looking at a Republican Congress who is cutting food stamp programs. You know, because, you know, it's just highly overrated. Money's so overrated. Yeah, you know, who needs it? So overrated. Which is why I think it's interesting that right now they're doing the National Food Stamp Challenge again. There are a couple of folks on Capitol Hill doing it. We did it 1 year. I found it impossible. I got to be honest. You know, $3 a day at the time, I found to be impossible. Now the challenge is $31.50 a week, which comes to about $4.50 a day. So, you know, I got to wonder how many of our millionaires in Congress could get by on $4.50 a day. I'll bet you they spend more than $4.50 on a cup of coffee a day. But here again, they're going to begrudge people who are trying to feed their kids. And I'm sure we all get the same email of, you know, how this one guy, you know, had six kids and how they each got all these thousands of dollars. And at the end of the year, it all added up to a couple hundred grand and he was living high off the hog. That's not reality. What's reality is $4.50 a day. That's barely a box of cereal to feed the kids in the morning and spaghetti for lunch and dinner. I don't even know that that comes up to that amount. So talk to me about being overrated. Talk to me about being overrated when your kid goes to the cupboard, as I did a number of times as a kid, and there be nothing there. Talk to me about that, Governor. And here's the thing. I mean, this guy, I think he's toast. If you saw the video of him, the viral video, I don't know whether he was drunk, high, I don't know. But it was hysterical. And I think it's well worth the watch. Or, you know, as one person said, he's acting a little gay, which there have been nothing wrong with it if he is, but plenty of rumors that he may be. And I'm not saying that, but I don't care if he is, but some on the right might care. But here's the thing. What we need a jobs program. We need to get people off of food stamps, off of $4.50 a day, and into paying taxes, growing the economy. A growing economy solves every one of our problems. It's that simple. And the quickest way to doing that, roads and bridges, infrastructure, building stuff, and even the steel that goes into stuff and the concrete that goes into roads and bridges. We should be making that as well. Anyway, we're going to talk with Donna Cooper next. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm up till 1 a.m., I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, teaching America for the better.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says labor is very concerned about Congressional Supercommittee Medicare and Medicaid cuts in the hundreds of billions of dollars. The AFL-CIO Executive Council met Monday to plan a public campaign against the cuts.
Trumka says working people have already made tremendous economic sacrifices, and labor won't stand for taking even more away from working people.
They've already given a lot. They've given their homes, they've given their jobs, they've given back in wages, while the rich have done better than ever. The middle class and the lower class have already given. It's time for the rich to give a little bit so that we can at least get back to balance. Working people will oppose any cuts to those essential programs, no matter who proposes them. And it should be a no-brainer that we will finally ask Wall Street and the super-rich to pay their fair share.
The AFL-CIO is activating 700,000 online activists to oppose the cuts and is also partnering with progressive groups nationwide to fight the Medicare and Medicaid cuts. Connecticut Red Cross workers are set to strike on Thursday. Jesse Russell has more.
American Red Cross blood collection employees in Connecticut have been working without a contract for 2 years and with no sign of an agreement on the horizon. Those workers are planning to strike on Thursday. Last weekend, the Red Cross rejected the most recent proposal put forth by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. While the strike will be open-ended, the organization says it doesn't expect to see a disruption of blood deliveries early in the strike action. The organization says it will wait until the strike begins to determine if it'll need to cancel any blood drives. The main issues holding up negotiations are differences in opinion regarding bargaining rights, scheduling, healthcare benefits, and employee input into staffing ratios. The union alleges that the Red Cross has substantially reduced the number of licensed nurses from 36 to less than 12, limiting the availability of licensed nurses at blood drives.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Now we all ought to feel just a little bit guilty. When we look into the eyes of our kids, cause brothers, it's a fact, if we take and don't put back, they'll have to pay for all we did. So let's leave some blue.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So last night, Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont was on MSNBC's Politics Nation, where he said China is now spending 9% of its GDP on infrastructure. They're building thousands of miles of high-speed rail. Europe's spending 5%. We're spending 2.2%. He said we're becoming the laughingstock of the entire world. As our infrastructure crumbles, you know, how can you argue with them? As you go over some of these roads coming into Harrisburg, I don't know how you can argue with them. My front end needs alignment as we speak. That's why I've asked Donna Cooper, senior fellow with the economic policy team at the American Progress Action Fund, to come talk to us. How do we get this thing turned around? How do we rebuild our infrastructure? What do we do to get people back to work? Donna, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
I'm good, and hopefully we'll be getting better if we can get folks back to work.
I look at
what Bernie says. He said, you want people put people back to work tomorrow? Start rebuilding the infrastructure.
Well, he's absolutely right. Look, for every $1 billion we put into infrastructure, we get about 18,000 jobs. So, you know, the federal government right now spends about $29 billion, and we should be spending more than that. You said China's spending 9% of their GDP.
That's what he
Guess
said.
Guess what we're spending? 2.5.
Yep.
So we're not doing so good, and we're wondering why Americans aren't working. So how do we do it? Well, the first thing we can do is support the president's job plan, because that puts an awful lot of money into infrastructure investments, and that's the first step.
Yeah, but how are you going to do that when you've got a political party in this country who is hell-bent on scorched earth, and if it's not their plan, their idea, and benefit their donors, it ain't happening?
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Rick. Last week, the Republican governor of Oklahoma said that she was going to repair every failing bridge. And increasingly, the campaign called Building America's Future is organizing grassroots campaigns in key primary states, and they started in New Hampshire and South Carolina. And Republicans are signing up to be part of it because they don't want to be on the wrong side of a bridge fall.
Yeah, I don't know how you can argue against rebuilding your infrastructure. And it's not just roads and bridges. I mean, it's our airports, it's our waterways, it's broadband access. It's so much that we're falling behind the rest of the world on.
Well, and it's true, and I think one of the things we have to sort of explain to people is not only does it create jobs, because what we're finding is people, like, they don't see the connection, but every bridge is steel, every bridge is concrete, every bridge is asphalt, and most of those things tend to be made not just in the U.S., but in the states in which the infrastructure is being repaired. But people also want to know that if we're paying for a bridge, it's going to come in on the price tag. The contractors, when they bid, they're going to be held to their price, and they're going to be held to get it done on time. So, you know, I think we need to be able to speak to the fact that there's some concern about doing this because people are a little cynical. They've seen things take too long. They've seen it go over budget. So, in fact, you know, the party that's supposed to be the fiscal discipline party ought to be standing up and saying we should do this and we should do it on time and on budget. And they would be building more public will. But if they're not going to do it, we should say it.
Absolutely. And I got to be honest. You know, we want things done on time and on budget. I'd rather see everything done under a project labor agreement to make sure that happens. Because in my research and what I've seen, for the majority of the time, it comes in on time, under budget, and quality work as well.
Absolutely. In fact, when you think about it, Rick, I mean, you know, everybody drives to work these days on a road or goes over a bridge or uses an airport or has been on a train. All of that has been done, and it's been done with government money. And most of the time it is on time and under budget or on budget. Increasingly, it's under budget. And so, you know, we actually have a pretty good track record, but, you know, one bad apple spoils the whole bushel. And so we've seen, you know, a bridge to nowhere in Alaska, and that becomes what people remember rather than the good project that happened in their community. I mean, I know when I drive around the state of Pennsylvania, you know, there were about 1,000 bridges repaired, and they came in under budget and on time. Pennsylvania is a spectacular track record of doing this right.
Absolutely. You know, and I got to be honest, I don't know that I was against the bridge to nowhere, because once you built it, it led somewhere.
Yeah, that one on the other hand.
I mean, then you would have seen
right.
You would have seen building around that. You would have seen growth in those areas as well. I'm in favor of building stuff, lots of stuff.
Well, I agree with you, but I think on some level, a lot of people are like, we need to make sure that we're, you know, building to the right places. So there's plenty of building to do, even just to repair. You know, in Pennsylvania, we have more than 6,000 bridges, right?
Yep.
They need to be fixed. So we don't have to worry about building nowhere. We already have a somewhere, and people in some places, they can't get there, because I know out in the western part of the state, there's bridges that are weight restricted. Nobody can go over them, so they can't get to their town without taking a 20 to 40 minute detour. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You said your front end's a mess. Mine is too, because we have so many miles of roads that need to be fixed.
You know, I look at it's the in the listening area here. The last couple of storms have torn up roads that have to be rebuilt. In fact, and you know where I'm at, just as you said, they're looking at changing the weight limits on a couple of on a bridge that the emergency vehicles won't be able to go over without an exemption permit. So there's a lot of this to think about.
Absolutely, think about it. We had to weight restrict about a year and a half ago. Weight restricted road that led to the Greater Johnstown Hospital. And to your point about the emergency vehicles, they weren't going to be able to get to the hospital without a 10 to 15 minute detour. Well, that's life or death.
Wow.
And, you know, I agree with you, Rick. I think that the point of making this local and making sure that citizens know what's at stake by not repairing is what's building the political will. This Oklahoma governor wasn't just doing this because she has a pro-building perspective and pro-work perspective. She didn't want to fail bridge on her watch.
Yeah, nobody wants that. So let's say this $60 billion national infrastructure bank doesn't happen. The Republicans get their way. They block this from happening. How do states like Oklahoma, states like Pennsylvania go ahead and do this? And the last time I talked to you, you had said something about raising some kind of taxes, I think on non-income taxes, without changing the Constitution. Is that feasible?
Well, in PA, we can't do that, right? I mean, in PA, in Pennsylvania, we can't. Oh, well, I'm sorry. Let me just say, in PA, we can't do a graduated income tax without changing the Constitution. But we can tax earnings that people have from dividends without changing the Constitution. So we have a set of earnings in Pennsylvania that aren't taxable right now. And we could, for instance, say any unearned income, like on stocks and dividends, could be taxed at 8%, and earned income could stay at 3%. So that way, the wages that you bring home would be taxed at 3%, but things that you earn off of investments could be taxed at twice that rate. That would not require a change in the Constitution to do that.
Wow, I could just imagine Matt Briette over at the Tinky Tank, over there at the Tea Party think tank at the Commonwealth Foundation, having his head explode, screaming, "Oh, all the rich people leave the state!"
Yeah, I don't know where they're going to go. They get a pretty good deal in Pennsylvania. You know, when you look at other states, they already tax unearned income at higher rates than Pennsylvania does. Because remember, we have the second lowest income tax in the country for both wages and unearned income. So any other state they're going to go to, with the exception of one, is going to tax at a higher rate already. So they're not going to have many choices of where to move. And so, you know, I don't think that's going to work. I think, you know, Matt might say, oh, you know, people are going to stop investing. I don't think that's the case. We see Wall Street actually, in spite of what's been going on with the American workers in the last 10 years, Wall Street, in spite of a debacle, is doing pretty darn good. So people who are investing and who have the wherewithal to invest are doing better than the average American worker.
Yeah, and the thing is those folks have to drive on roads and bridges as well, and they invest in companies who rely on those roads and bridges to get their products to market, and they rely on our infrastructure probably a lot more than you and I do personally.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's interesting because the infrastructure issue creates some strange bedfellows. I mean, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has been a leading advocate for investment in infrastructure and for a gas tax increase, because their businesses depend on highly functioning airports, ports, waterways, roads, bridges. They need the stuff to work. And, you know, you were talking about China and them being a 90, they invest 9% of their GDP in infrastructure. Well, we do 2.4%. You know, a report came out about a month and a half ago from something called the World Economic Forum, and it's the sort of global ranking by business people of what they think about countries. It's not highly scientific, except for that it does get responses from all the largest CEOs in the world. And Pennsylvania, America used to be ranked number 3 or 4 in infrastructure, and now we're down to 24th. Where CEOs, when they think about their companies and their efficiency and where they want to locate and where they want to do business, when they think about infrastructure, America ranks 24th in the world.
Well, I mean, that's simple, because we've starved the beast. We've had this mentality that we need to cut taxes. You know, I'm hearing local county commissioner race ads on the radio now saying, well, we balanced the budget, you know, 8-10 years in a row. We didn't raise any taxes. And my first thought is, well, how much investing in the local infrastructure happened? How much road work did you guys do? How much of anything did you do besides cut
and really bonus? Unfortunate, because, you know, that whole thinking started with Karl Rove, right? I mean, their whole thinking was if you make government so ineffective, people will think it's ineffective and think it's irrelevant and we won't need it anymore.
Yeah, actually, it was Grover Norquist who wanted to take the government in the bathtub and drown it.
Yeah, and Grover was actually on an event down here in Washington with Ed Rendell a couple months ago, and, you know, he really had no answer on infrastructure. He couldn't explain how he thought bridges were going to get rebuilt or airports were going to get rebuilt. And, you know, you can't have a normal conversation and say, how's this bridge going to get rebuilt? And then his only answer is, well, use the taxes we have now better. okay, so should I cut Social Security? Should I cut Medicare? Should I cut defense so that we can build the bridges? Because it's really our only option.
Well, their option is cut Social Security, cut Medicare. And I think you did a nice job on the piece you've got over at the AmericanProgress.org website, talking about the Republicans' draft legislation that just came out, slashing funding to things like education, health and human services, while making sure that the tax breaks for big oil and the tax breaks for wealthy investors are there for the future.
Well, you know, Rick, and to the point, the tax breaks for oil, you know, we've had them for nearly 100 years now, when oil was a nascent industry and it needed perhaps some help. But, with Exxon's profits being record high again, one has to really question whether they need any tax breaks. Meanwhile, the very things that are critical to our future, whether it's infrastructure or education, are getting cut. So, you know, we're trying to pull the wool back from people's eyes and say, look what's going on here. There's real information that you need to make. Do you think we should be funding Pell Grants so kids can go to college? Do you think we should be repairing bridges and making our airports better? And people say yes. And then you say, well, should we, tax the oil companies or stop giving them tax breaks? And people say, absolutely yes. I mean, no one can figure out why we're still having oil tax breaks or ethanol tax breaks, other than the fact that to some extent, what the Tea Party has in common with the left right now is that there's too much money in politics in Washington.
Well, I might go to a degree. I think there's money being wasted. And I think tax breaks for oil companies, I think that's wasted money. I think tax breaks for wealthy investors, that's kind of wasted. I don't think the corporate jet tax break, kind of wasted. I don't think education, roads, bridges, I don't think that's wasted at all. I think those are investments in our future.
Right, but for you and I to be able to affect the conversation about ethanol and oil tax breaks or, getting a special tax break for dividend holdings that you hold for a long time, the average citizen is going up against extremely well-heeled lobbyists. We remember this from the healthcare debate. Why did we lose a public option? Why did the healthcare plan turn out the way it did? Because there was so much money at play. And so, we would be making better decisions in this country if we had less money controlling politics. But given the current situation where there is no real campaign expenditure limits and there's no public financing, the fact that the Republicans are blocking infrastructure investment, I think, is to their own peril, no matter how much money they try to put out to persuade people otherwise. Because another bridge will fall. Because we saw last summer when the FAA was shut down by the Republicans that the American public don't accept this paradigm that we can't invest in infrastructure because we can't have any movement on taxes. They're not accepting that.
Not at all.
Representative Micah, he had a hard time. He's from Florida. He's the House Appropriations Committee, House Subcommittee on Appropriations for Transportation Committee chair. And when he went home to Florida after shutting down the FAA, he said it was one of the worst experiences of his life because it wasn't just a few progressives like you and I yelling at him about shutting down the FAA, but the American people from across America targeted him and said that was irresponsible. We can't have a developed nation operate this way. And you saw what happened when the president went to the bridge between Indiana and Ohio.
Right.
McConnell was very unhappy. These guys do not want to be put on the hot seat for not investing in infrastructure. And that, I think, is why the strategy of building America's future, which would be to get, grassroots chapters started in states and make this a primary issue.
Absolutely a primary issue. I wish there was a time where we could have common ground again, because I honestly believe that infrastructure is one of those things that should be no-brainer. We need it. Invest in it.
Well, the biggest infrastructure investment we've had since Eisenhower built the interstate system was Ronald Reagan. So, the paradigm of the Republican Party is somebody who did the largest infrastructure investment on his watch. And George Bush Senior also invested heavily in infrastructure. So there's a lot of Republican fingerprints on infrastructure, and most of the current Republican Party is trying to not have that be known.
Yeah. It shouldn't be a R or D thing. It should be an American thing. It should be the right thing. Last question I've got for you. You know, as you look into the future, this investment bank people are trying to say this is the answer. I'm not so big on private-public partnerships. That's a whole other argument. But do you see any future? Do you see this moving in this next couple of months? Or will this end up being something that plays out in 2012?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. The Republicans have figured out that infrastructure is something they would like to not have on the agenda in 2012 because it's a loser for them. They're on record as blocking investments. So there is some movement in the House Republican leadership, both from Boehner and from MICA, to try and move a transportation bill into the Senate and to get it passed. They know to pass a bill in the Senate, they've got to have an infrastructure bank in the final bill. That doesn't mean it's in the bill that the House sends over, but in a reconciled bill that might pass the House and Senate before the election, there will be an infrastructure bank where I don't think the Senate will move. But to your point, Rick, an infrastructure bank does not solve our problems. It's the infrastructure bank's proposals are somewhere between $50 to $100 billion over 10 years. So either you're talking about $5 or $10 billion a year, and we need to be spending $50 to $60 billion a year. It's a piece of the puzzle, but it is not the solution in and of itself. But, you know, I think if, God forbid, a tragedy were to happen on our highways or airports or ports or bridges, you would see a transportation bill move very quickly, and it might have a bank in it. But absent that, if the grassroots work and your listeners and other people across the country to continue to push and say we need to rebuild, there's a chance a bill might pass before the election. I'm not sure that's a good thing, because I think before the election, tendency will be to fund infrastructure at the current level that we fund it, not cut. So the Republicans can go home and say, we didn't cut infrastructure spending. It passed a bill and it has 5 years of spending. But what will happen is then all of America will settle for the status quo, which has us 24th in the world in infrastructure and at 2.4% the GDP, less than a third of what the Chinese are spending. So I guess I'm hoping a little bit and optimistically that the election will be a referenda on jobs, and the election will be a referenda that says the American people reject the Grover Norquist pledge and that we need to invest if we're going to grow this economy, and investing in infrastructure makes sense.
Yeah, but that's still a year away before that happens, before the election, and there are a lot of people who need to work today.
Now.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Donna Cooper, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you. I'd love to have you back again soon.
Thanks, Rick. Likewise.
All righty. Donna Cooper, Senior Fellow with the Economic Policy Team over at the American Progress Action Fund. AmericanProgress.org is the website. Going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
America's power elites on Wall Street and in Washington have been stunned by the sudden surge of the Occupy movement. Some 600 U.S. communities have Occupy groups, thousands of middle-class people have taken to the streets, and recent polls show that nearly 6 out of 10 Americans support what the protesters are saying and doing. Why is this happening, wail Wall Street bankers, CEOs, and their pet politicos? What is upsetting all these people? You'd think that the super-rich could afford to buy a clue, but apparently not. So, to help them grasp the situation, I've gathered a mess of news clips from just the past few weeks that pretty much spells it out for them. They needn't read the actual stories, just scan the headlines. Better yet, I'll do it for them. No need to thank me. I'm always delighted to edify the rich. Headline, slumping wages, rising health costs cause strain. Top earners double share of nation's income. Snapshot of poverty surge in the suburbs. Banks to make customers pay debit card fee. Record high 4.5 million have not worked in a year or more. House GOP spending plan cuts money for job training. U.S. income levels sink, leaves fragile consumers in a bind. Outsized severance packages continue for executives. More new poor going hungry. Banks are awash in cash. Bank of America to cut 30,000 jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, even a Wall Street banker ought to be able to understand the message that these headlines are delivering. Such daily headlines reveal the depth of inequality and rank injustice that's propelling the Occupy uprising. As we say in Texas, even a dog knows the difference between being stumbled over and being kicked. America's middle class and the poor are tired of being kicked, and now they're kicking back. This is just the start. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Put your hands up in the air and feel the sunshine. That should be on the top 10 list over at Thames Water. I love this story. This UK company, Thames Water, they're the big water company, one of the global players. In fact, they own a couple of water systems here in the U.S., one of the big players. And as I've said a number of times, we're going to be fighting war over water. So there's going to be one of the countries, remember that name, Thames Water. But evidently in the U.K., they've done a survey, and they've got this whole campaign going. That they want people to start singing in the shower. And they have a list of songs that they want you to sing, like the Beatles song, Love Me Do. The whole point of that, it's 2 minutes, 22 seconds long. They figure if you're singing in the shower, you got your business done, 2 minutes, 22 seconds, you're out. You're out of the shower, moving into your day, and saving water as well. Because, look, it is a valuable commodity. Of the top five, Elvis Presley's Love Me Tender, 2 minutes, 41 seconds. Somebody named Dizzy Rascal, the Dance Wave with Mick, whatever that is. Don't know. A little over 3 minutes. Take That's Could It Be Magic? A little over 3.5 minutes. And It's Raining Men by the Weather Girls. And I think I've caught my wife, singing that in the shower. I think I have. But they're the top five. Now, the top five ones to avoid, according to the folks over at Thames Water, Stairway to Heaven. I don't know that that's a sing-along song in the shower, but stay away from Stairway to Heaven. Stay away from American Pie, Don McLean's song, 8 minutes, 33 seconds. Stay away from Meatloaf's I Would Do Anything for Love, the album version, which is over 12 minutes. And stay away from rapper Delights by the Sugar Hill Gang. Stay away from that, 14 and a half minutes. And, of course, always stay away from Pink Floyd's Echoes, 23 minutes, 31 seconds. That would be kind of a long shower, considering that, according to the folks at Thames, this Jane Farron, each of us, she says, uses 160 liters of water per day. And when showering, you use 10 liters of water per minute. So if you could limit that a little bit, you could do the Beatles song, you could save a whole boatload of water. They're saying that only 35% of Brits do any singing in the shower or admit to it. So they're trying to encourage that. They want people to do a little more singing. And they said, look, it's documented that if you're singing in the shower, it can have a positive psychological effect too. So, while the economy's in the toilet, if you're singing through your shower, it might help you put a little step in your day. Little step. Also, they say it releases some of those endorphins, the feel-good chemicals. Do that. There you go. But here in this country, and you want to compare it a little bit, kind of interesting. You look at Stephen King, the Republican from Iowa. He was talking during a committee hearing about his showering habits. He says, I don't want a nanny state. He says, I drill my shower head. Drill it out with an 8-inch drill bit. And I encourage any American that finds himself wasting too much time for their feet to get wet to drill out their Al Gore water saver shower head and go and commit an act of civil disobedience. That's civil disobedience in Steve King's world? Oh, boy. Yeah, well, again, that is the Republican mentality. Me, 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 me. It's all about me. And I have a shower, water-saving shower head. My feet get wet immediately. I don't know what kind of shower head Steve's got. But that, to him, an act of civil disobedience. I don't know if you saw this, though. We can't raise taxes here in the state of Pennsylvania. We can't seem to do anything with the Marcellus Shale or the magical box there in Delaware. Evidently, tomorrow morning, there's going to be a vote, though, on a shale impact fee. And Mike Terzai said that this provision that he talked about came straight from the governor's office. And it's one major difference between this measure and the proposal Senate leaders have been working on is the following section, which negates all local drilling ordinances and reads, this is, House Bill 1950, page 122, all local rules, regulation, code, agreements, resolutions, ordinances, or other local enactments that regulate oil and gas operations. Here it comes, the punchline, the money shot, are hereby superseded and preempted. That means total control by the state. What happened to the people who want local control? What happened to those people who are afraid of a big government? It seems the Republicans like it, too. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Back to America. Rick Smith.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer is a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Chances are when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
We back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast there at the website or download the Stitcher app on your smartphone and take the class war on the go. So Mike Bloomberg was asked about what's going on in Occupy Wall Street. And he was asked, you know, if the grievances by the folks out there were unfounded. And he had an interesting statement. He says, you know, I hear your complaints. Some of them are totally unfounded. It was not the banks, he said, that created the mortgage crisis. He said it was plain and simple Congress who forced everyone to go and give mortgages to people who were on the cusp. He said, but they were the ones who pushed Freddie and Fannie to make a bunch of loans that were imprudent, if you will. They were the ones who pushed the banks to loan to everyone. And the reality is the vast majority, more than nearly 85% of all the subprime mortgages in 2006 were private lenders. Nearly 85% of the private subprime mortgages were to low and moderate income borrowers, were private firms who did this. This wasn't Freddie and Fannie's doing. They had nothing to do with the explosion of bad lending. They had nothing to do with the fact that the bank said, we can throw this off on someone else. We can create this other entity and sell it overseas, which is what those credit default swaps turned into. They bundled them, sold them to other countries. Saudi Arabia bought a bunch of them. Why do you think we bailed out a lot of the global banks? They were buying this garbage. It was the rating system that had a lot to do with it, too, and the unadulterated greed. And he went on to say that, well, you know, those kids had to go do something. Go do something to make the world a better place. And I agree. I agree. And I think the people at Occupy Oakland have decided to do just that, because if you look at their General Assembly from last night, they made the democratic decision to occupy... Well, they occupy people's homes who are being foreclosed and to occupy abandoned cities houses across the city. And I think that's a step in the right direction, considering Bank of America and Bank of America in particular, but a lot of these other banks have done some major screw ups, going after foreclosing on people's homes who, quite frankly, did nothing wrong, and in a couple of cases had actually paid their loan up front, paid it early, some paid it off. One guy's house was blown away in the hurricane. They had a policy on that, and they wanted the money back. And you look at this and you go, the right-wing meme being, oh, it's government that's bad. It wasn't the private capitalist system. No. It was government who let them do it. And I would argue there's probably some truth to that. Government did it by not regulating it, Jake. Had you had your hand on the button that you could have stopped this, had Glass-Steagall been in place, had we not passed Graham-Leach-Bliley, had that not happened during the Clinton years with the Republicans pushing it through and Bill Clinton signing it, we're not in this place.
Well, there's actually some talk, Rick, about trying to reinstate it, but you know that's impossible, but it's good to get the argument going. But get back to occupying homes. Marcy Kaptur, who I have great admiration for, has for the last couple of years said, look, don't leave your home. If your mortgage is foreclosed, make sure that they are following the law. Make sure that they are dotting their I's and crossing their T's, because they might not be following the spirit of the law. But beyond that, I think it's about time people just make a stand and occupy those homes, get media coverage. Let's make sure that the American people know how bad it is out there. How bad these banks took these people over, how they got their money up front on their mortgages, how when they signed up the people, even though it was for zero down, they got a nice big fat bonus, the individuals who did it, and then they sold those mortgages when people couldn't pay anymore. They sold those mortgages on the secondary market and made money again. It was a win-win-win for them, and it was a big loss for the American consumer.
And as I said from the beginning, had we bailed out the folks at the bottom, and this is what I think people are really frustrated about, that we've given all this money to the banks and that we, under the guise that they're going to stop the collapse, and it didn't stop. It actually happened anyway, and people are still losing their homes, and you've got Romney who's saying, well, you know, the best thing we need to do, get out of the way and let them start foreclosing on houses, and you've got the banks saying the same thing. Hey, let us foreclose because we can get things rolling again once we start foreclosing on these properties. And I got to be honest, I don't think that's the answer. I think that's a problem. Kicking people out of their homes, no, not working for me. But that's the investor class view. The big corporatists and people like Romney and his son Tag, who evidently being accused of a Ponzi scheme, which we're gonna talk about this week with Li Fang over at the over at Think Progress. But they've got all this money, and look how this whole thing works. This whole boom bust cycle. It's pretty simple. They create these bubbles, they burst, they come in with the cash that they've got, and they buy up all the assets, and then they sell it back to you. So you're continually on this treadmill, falling further and further behind, while they, doing very well, thank you very much, which explains how over the last, since 79 to 2007, the top 1% saw their income grow by 275%. You and I, not so much.
Well, let's be honest, at the end of the day, it looks like this Congress, at least right now, isn't going to be doing anything about it. So the American people are going to have to force their issue. Occupy those homes. Let the people know who these banks are. That's what's going to have to happen. People are going to have to be informed. People are going to have to be angry. People are going to have to go to the street. If we want to change this thing, it's not going to come from within. We're going to have to force these politicians to do the right thing, either that or get them out of office.
Well, I mean, it scares them. I mean, it just scares them to death that anybody would, how dare they stand up and how dare they question. An enraged public scares people like Bloomberg. They've had it so well for so long. They don't want people disobeying. They don't want people demanding things. They want people who are grateful and, oh, the benevolent corporation gave me these wonderful things. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. They want a subservient class. They want a broken down working class as they've worked for. Pretty simple. But now people, you know, the old saying is there's only so much stuff people, there's some stuff people won't eat. And being kicked to the curb and having your life's work stolen out from under you is pretty much it for some folks. And then putting this next generation in such deep debt that they may never get out of it. And then saying, oh, well, we just can't afford that. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, the American people are compassionate people, but all too often we're not aware of the true suffering. You know, maybe we need to put on a campaign when the people lose their houses. Maybe we need to make it a real issue and show the cost in human terms, not only to the parents, but to the children. Mm-hmm. What they wind up in a shelter or they wind up homeless. Those are the tragedies in America that should never be happening. Absolutely never be happening.
But all I hear from the right, we're broke, we can't have it, can't afford it, but we can afford more tax cuts. And you listen to all of the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs running for the Republican nomination. They've all got tax plans that cut taxes on the wealthiest people while raising taxes on the poor. And you explain to me how it is someone making minimum wage can pay more as a percentage of their income than the billionaire class. Back after this with Laura Clausen.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says labor is very concerned about Congressional Super Committee Medicare and Medicaid cuts in the hundreds of billions of dollars. The AFL-CIO Executive Council met Monday to plan a public campaign against the cuts. Trumka says working people have already made tremendous economic sacrifices, and labor won't stand for taking even more away from working people.
They've already given a lot. They've given their homes, they've given their jobs, they've given back in wages, while the rich have done better than ever. The middle class and the lower class have already given. It's time for the rich to give a little bit so that we can at least get back to balance. Working people will oppose any cuts to those essential programs, no matter who proposes them. And it should be a no-brainer that we will finally ask Wall Street and the super-rich to pay their fair share.
The AFL-CIO is activating 700,000 online activists to oppose the cuts and is also partnering with progressive groups nationwide to fight the Medicare and Medicaid cuts. Connecticut Red Cross workers are set to strike on Thursday. Jesse Russell has more.
American Red Cross blood collection employees in Connecticut have been working without a contract for 2 years, and with no sign of an agreement on the horizon. Those workers are planning to strike on Thursday. Last weekend, the Red Cross rejected the most recent proposal put forth by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. While the strike will be open-ended, the organization says it doesn't expect to see a disruption of blood deliveries early in the strike action. The organization says it will wait until the strike begins to determine if it'll need to cancel any blood drives. The main issues holding up negotiations are differences in opinion regarding bargaining rights, scheduling, healthcare benefits, and employee input into staffing ratios. The union alleges that the Red Cross has substantially reduced the number of licensed nurses from 36 to less than 36, limiting the availability of licensed nurses at blood drives.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there. Or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app, and you can take the program on the go with you. So, you know, here in the state of Pennsylvania, they've been talking about destroying education. It's really been a major attack on teachers, on the public school system as a whole. And as I've been saying for the longest time, this is not just a state issue. This is from the national playbook. That's why I've asked Laura Clausen, labor editor over at dailycos.com, to come talk to us. Laura, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this story that you put out about the Heritage Foundation, and the American Enterprise Institute, basically calling teachers, stupid and overpaid.
Yes, and overpaid because they're stupid. Because they're stupid, these think tanks think that they shouldn't be making a good wage.
I don't get the logic there.
It's really amazing. They've taken all of the studies that show that teachers are underpaid relative to other people who have the same amount of education that teachers on average have. They said, well, okay, that's true, but teachers, according to IQ tests, aren't as smart as people in other fields, so therefore they should be paid less. Except that the supposed IQ tests that they're talking about have incredible race and gender biases and class biases built into them.
I don't know how you can make that argument with really a straight face.
Well, you know, I guess if you're as used to being a dishonest hack as the people at the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute are, you'd have some practice making that kind of argument with a straight face, but otherwise I don't get it either.
I mean, the reality, if you make that argument, then I would have to say that, you know, why didn't we see George Bush go into teaching if it was such a lucrative gig? Or Rick Perry. I don't know if you've seen Rick Perry lately, but George Bush has got to be jumping for joy because there's someone dumber than him.
Exactly. You know, but these are people who who are kind of in the middle of this dropping in things like, well, you know, it might look like architects are overpaid, except that architects aren't overpaid because they're architects. So, you know, we don't hate them. Therefore, it's okay. It's just, it's blatant class kind of bias against teachers and against the sort of solid, regular people, middle class, that goes into teaching.
Well, let me ask you this. How much of this do you think is just pure hatred of public sector anything, of anything that's we the people, that belongs to you and me, that public education is something that that we have decided as a nation is important. It's compulsory. Every child has to go because we've decided as a society we wanted an educated society. How much of this is the hatred of the public aspect of this and the goal of the billionaire class to privatize education and really More than privatize, profitize it.
I think that's absolutely it. And as a result, you see people at these think tanks being put to work, coming up with these kind of elaborate, obviously false statistical justifications for why teachers are overpaid, when really, I mean, it doesn't take more than a few minutes of casual attention to see through what's happening.
You know, what I love about those think tanks is they write their own papers and they cite their own papers, so they don't really actually do any research. They start with their end point and they work their way backwards and create the what they need to make their point.
Right, but they throw just enough fancy statistical language into it to confuse, you know, the average reporter who's going through a whole bunch of press releases and writing them up really fast.
Yeah, because, you know, I usually go through the bibliography page and go, well, where'd this stuff come from? And a lot of it is just a bunch of other right-wing hacks using each other's stuff. But again, you know, this to me is the result of the billionaire class and the wealth class wanting to profitize education and take it away from us so that we go back to the good old days of the 90s, you know, back to the 1890s where you didn't have guarantee to an education.
Absolutely. You know, and one of the things in this report is, well, private school teachers aren't paid as well as public school teachers. So that shows that the market doesn't support this kind of salary for public school teachers. Look, I went to a private high school, and what we had some very good teachers who had been at it for a while. We also had a lot of teachers who came in straight out of college and were on a revolving door program. Yep. They were there for 2 years. They worked as teachers, as coaches, as dorm parents. And on the weekends, they were off waiting tables someplace at some local pizza place. You know, that's the model that they're promoting as, you know, this is what the market can support.
Well, I mean, at the end of it is what the point is it's let's use and abuse. And look, you do know it's going to be a revolving door and high turnover rates. And that's what they want. They want disposable people. Labor is just another factor of production, something to be another cog in the wheel to be used up and discarded.
Exactly. And, you know, even at my private school, those revolving door teachers, they didn't teach the honors classes. They taught the lower level classes. And then they left, and the longtime teachers were the ones who taught the honors classes.
Well, look what we're doing to college. Look what we're doing to college courses. They've actually got, graduate students teaching the 100 level courses. And I've actually had a couple of people tell me that they have undergraduates teaching the undergraduate courses. They took it last semester. Okay, you could teach that class because you took it last semester.
I've definitely seen that with TAing. I haven't seen it with teaching the classes, but yeah, I know that's where we're headed.
Peer professors, you know, they can get them for minimum wage, and there you go. It's sad, sad stuff. But to me, it's this whole move towards the whole No Child Left Behind model, this standardized test model where every kid is the same, and it's this factory line of children who are just empty vessels that we dump knowledge into, and. You know, as we've poured all this money into testing, is there anything out there that says it's doing us any good? Are the test scores coming up? Since we seem to be teaching to nothing but the test, are we seeing any significant changes?
You know, in fact, in the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is often referred to as the National Report Card, came out today. And, in fact, this year, over 2009, there are barely any changes. You know, it's gone up a point here and there, but mostly it's stayed just about exactly flat in the past 2 years. So, you know, there's there's a lot of problems. Well, there's a lot of problems with saying that any one test dictates how our educational system is doing. Not that that fact stops them from trying to say that each test dictates how our educational system is doing.
But at the end of the day, when you're gutting $960 million like we did here in Pennsylvania, or some $400 million like they did in Michigan, or close to $1 billion like they did in Ohio, when you're gutting that kind of money out of the system, when you're taking that away from education and defunding the future of this nation, what do you expect? I mean, you know, we've got a billionaire class in this country. You look at the top 400 people worth what, $1.4 trillion? Yet we're gutting education across this country. What do you expect?
Right. Well, and it's also that the biggest predictor of how kids do in school isn't anything that happens in the school. It's class. It's poverty. So if you suddenly have a whole lot more kids poor, of course they're not going to be doing as well. So that's one of the things we're seeing is our economy keeps diverging. The 1% get richer and richer. The rest of us really don't get richer and richer, and education suffers as a result.
Yeah, but you're talking class war. Oh, you're talking class war.
I know. I don't know how I dare it.
How dare you? Yet I look at what the Economic Policy Institute put out in one of your pieces that said the richest 400 households in this country could pay every single student loan for every student in this entire country and still have money to left over. And yet we're gutting education at every level. We're making kids take out larger and larger student loans. It seems like a really misplaced priority structure we have.
Absolutely. And you have all these Republicans saying, let's eliminate Pell Grants. No, let's not just eliminate Pell Grants. Let's eliminate Pell Grants and federal student loans. Let's just make it every person for themselves in the private loan market paying as high of interest as the private loans can charge.
Yes, yes, the free market. Let's get those kids on the rolls forever. That's good for business. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Laura Clausen, DailyKos.com. She's the labor editor over there. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Laura's name. It'll take you right there. So you look at all these people who are in the streets all across the country and occupies all over the place. And now you're seeing people, unions coming out. I was on a TV show recently, and the guy I was on there said that unions have funded this, and it's all the big unions are paying for it. That's not true, is it?
No, it's really not true. You know, the Occupy movement has taken things like medical training and storage space and stuff like that from unions. But as far as I know, they haven't taken cash. This is an independent movement that unions have said, we share some goals, we're going to offer you some help, but we're not going to take you over, we're not going to bankroll you.
You know, I've said, you know, right at first they said it was George Soros. Soros funded this. And I said, you know, if Soros funded everything that the right claims he funds, he'd be one of those kids down there on Occupy Wall Street going, hey, I'm broke. Help me out here. Because
we'd all be rich.
And he seems to be the only one. I mean, you know, the right has a whole slew of billionaires funding their projects. The left, I guess, has, what, Soros? That's about it?
That's the only one I hear about.
So lastly, I guess, is it Thursday that this general strike is going to happen in Oakland?
Wednesday, actually, tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow, okay.
Yeah.
So what's the goal here?
You know, you hear different things. That's one of the things about a decentralized movement with no official leader. Some of the Occupy Oakland people are saying they really genuinely want to shut down the whole city and they're hoping nobody turns out to work. Others are saying we're going to make a show of power by getting a lot of people out in the streets and shutting down some stuff. You know, so we'll see. It's going to be an interesting experiment to see how many people heed the call and how many people get out there, how many people don't go to work.
Yeah, what do you say to the right winger who's been saying, see, all they want to do is cause trouble. They're stopping me from getting to work. What do you say to those guys? I mean, when you have this kind of an action, aren't you playing kind of right into the right wing mean that they're just out there to cause trouble? I mean, because I'm with the idea of a general strike. I'm in with the idea of shutting things down, but the right wing is going to use this, really going to use it to attack the whole movement.
You know, I think one of the things about this is it's a it's a leaderless movement making this call. Anyone who heeds the call and goes on strike tomorrow, all of those people are doing it on their own. So it's an organic thing that's not coming out of any kind of pressure or any kind of bureaucracy. It's just a couple thousand people said, let's do this. And anyone who does it with them is doing it of their own accord.
Well, I'm looking forward to see what happens. I would like to see the numbers in the streets, and I've been calling for it for quite some time, to see the unemployed, the uninsured, and really the underemployed and underinsured as well out into the streets, saying, here I am, you know, do
right.
something. Again, the website, dailycos.com, the labor page. Laura Clausen is the, really a very prolific writer. I mean, I got to give you credit. I think you write more articles in a day than I read. So good for you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And it's always great to have you on the program. Look forward to having you back real soon. Thanks
good
so much.
Talking to you.
All right. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
America's power elites on Wall Street and in Washington have been stunned by the sudden surge of the Occupy movement. Some 600 U.S. communities have Occupy groups, thousands of middle-class people have taken to the streets, and recent polls show that nearly 6 out of 10 Americans support what the protesters are saying and doing. Why is this happening, wail Wall Street bankers, CEOs, and their pet politicos? What is upsetting all these people? You'd think that the super-rich could afford to buy a clue, but apparently not. So, to help them grasp the situation, I've gathered a mess of news clips from just the past few weeks that pretty much spells it out for them. They needn't read the actual stories, just scan the headlines. Better yet, I'll do it for them. No need to thank me. I'm always delighted to edify the rich. Headline, slumping wages, rising health costs cause strain. Top earners double share of nation's income. Snapshot of poverty surge in the suburbs. Banks to make customers pay debit card fee. Record high 4.5 million have not worked in a year or more. House GOP spending plan cuts money for job training. U.S. income levels sink, leaves fragile consumers in a bind. Outsized severance packages continue for executives. More new poor going hungry. Banks are awash in cash. Bank of America to cut 30,000 jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, even a Wall Street banker ought to be able to understand the message that these headlines are delivering. Such daily headlines reveal the depth of inequality and rank injustice that's propelling the Occupy uprising. As we say in Texas, even a dog knows the difference between being stumbled over and being kicked. America's middle class and the poor are tired of being kicked, and now they're kicking back. This is just the start.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. So the question is, why do you need a manufacturing base? Why do you make things? Why do you care if you have an auto plant? Why do you care if you've got a space program? Why do you care if you produce stuff? Well, I look at this story from AFP. Car giant Toyota today announced they unveiled their nursing and healthcare robot. The idea behind it is this robot's going to help nurses move elderly folks, people who are immobile. A lot of nurses I know have back problems trying to lift people. Heaven forbid, some 90-pound nurse never gonna be able to move me. Not gonna happen. So you've got Toyota, one of the biggest automakers in the world, who has developed this robot. And they say that they've developed it through some of the research that they've done for their automobiles. And you look at one thing leading into another. You've created this technology with your cars. Now you've figured out another use for it. This is why you need a manufacturing base. And we can go back through, numerous examples. I mean, the one that pops into my head is the sewing machines that they used to make shoes with. They figured out they could use that machine to put, little conductors into little microchips. Ingenuity. We used to have that. Some call them American ingenuity. We had that until we gave it away to the Chinese. So it's interesting that, they're going to use this, and it's thinking. It's one of these opportunities for folks to kick our behinds again. They call it the independent walk assistant, and what they do is they strap the user's legs into this thing that predict the movements and help move people around. We'll see how this goes. Good for them. But they're looking to get into the Japanese market sometime in 2013. I wonder if we're working on anything like that. Kind of doubt it. We're just going back to, just die. You're just going to sit around and go ahead and die. Well, I mean, isn't that the point? I mean, isn't that the whole thing that the right's trying to push down our throats?
Pretty much. Going back to the good old days.
And one of the people who, right at the front of that, Wyoming Senator, former Wyoming Senator, Alan Simpson. And you all remember Alan. He's the guy who said that, Social Security's a big milk cow, got 310 million teats on it. And, all these greedy geezers are just sucking off the system. Remember him? Guy who said, we need to reform Social Security so it works like it used to. See, back when life expectancy was 58, we made retirement age 65. See? We need to make it work like it used to. So basically you're dead years before you're able to collect it. Well, he's back in again, said something kind of stupid. The AARP ran an ad. And understand the AARP, their job to stand up for retired people. That's why they're called the American Association for Retired People. They ran this ad. Listen to this.
I'm not a number. I'm not a line item on a budget. And I'm definitely not a pushover. But I am a voter. So, Washington, before you even think about cutting my Medicare and Social Security benefits, here's a number you should remember. 50 million. We are 50 million seniors who earned our benefits. And you will be hearing from us today and on Election Day.
Is there anything wrong with that? Well, evidently, Alan does. And Alan was in a deficit reduction committee hearing today where he said this.
They said, we are 50 million. We're watching you. We remember and we vote. I tell you, that is a really ugly thing.
It's a really ugly thing. It's disgusting. It's ugly.
It's called democracy.
He went on MSNBC's Daily Rundown. He called the guy who was the lead actor in the commercial a jerk, called him arrogant. Said, well, he's high paid, he makes a lot of money, and, he's a jerk and he's arrogant. And he goes on to say, let me tell you what will happen with their view of the world, which is to do nothing to restore the solvency of Social Security. He goes, in the year 2036, you're going to waddle up to the window and get a check for 23% less. And that I hope they remember AARP. And I hope a lot of young people will, too. Again, you got to love fear and smear. If we had a growing economy, and I go back to this again because I think it's so vitally important. We're spending so much time figuring out how to cut benefits for granny. And look, the reality is these people paid into the system. They were guaranteed something. They should be made whole first. And then you worry about the billionaire class. I think we've got our priorities a little skewed, just a little. We're more concerned with Bill Gates than we are with Granny. And, what's interesting is even Bill Gates is saying, the wealthy people in this country, they think they should pay more taxes too.
I just can't imagine these millionaires and billionaires going down and bear sighting the streets because they're going to have to pay 4 or 5% more in taxes. I mean, it's going to be rough for them. There certainly is a case to be made that taxes should be more progressive, and you know that's being debated by various people. Do you support?
Well, it's not being debated by anyone. Every Republican is saying, we need flat taxes. We need to make sure that the wealthy don't have to pay too much, and we make those poor people pay something. See, they got to pay something. Got to have skin in the game. What happens if they don't have any skin? Again, we've skinned these people down to minimum wage, where minimum wage isn't even minimum anymore. Minimum wage is poverty. But, you know, even you got Bill Gates saying, you know what, rich people should pay maybe a little more. Thoughts?
Absolutely, absolutely. And here's the thing, Rick, and we talked about this in other scenarios similar. Look, if we eliminate the tax breaks for the rich, you can bet at some point they're going to come back and want a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. However, the little guys out there who you're protecting the Social Security, I mean, their political clout isn't near. And that's the problem with making these compromises. Why should we have to compromise? End those tax breaks, and then we'll look
then
at
we'll
it
talk.
Again.
Then we'll talk. But, you know, here's the thing. You take Gates' position. They're not going to put up. I love his word, barricades. I always thought it was barricade. But, you know, I guess that's from living abroad for so long. Global citizen. But I think of him, and then I try and square that with Rick Perry.
You know, we have young people who today are occupying Wall Street, that, you know, there are some people out there that are making too much money. And if somebody were to ask me what's the best advice that I could give them, excuse me, it would be that money's probably the most highly overrated thing in the world.
It's just the most highly overrated thing in the whole world. And, you know, he goes on to say, yeah, I had money, and, you know, it's better to have. Yeah, better to have. So if it's the most highly overrated thing in the world, then the very wealthy should not mind if we take some of it and build roads and bridges and educate children and give people health care and make sure my grandmother doesn't have to grovel and beg to make an existence in this world. Thoughts? Comments? Ideas? Anything? I mean, because the Republicans don't seem to have any rational thought process moving us forward. What it seems to be is they want to take us back, again, as I've said a number of times, back to the good old days of the 90s. The 1890s, before you had any type of security, before you had any type of safety net, and when they created these booms and busts, they really knew how to make a crisis work for them. And there were people dying in the streets. That's where they want to take us back to. And you look at all of the uprisings of that period. That's what we're reliving. You know, how long have we been talking about the Bonus Army and Coxey's Army and all of the populist uprisings that have been going on? How long have we been calling for that to happen? And here we are at a moment where folks are actually doing that. It's exciting times. We just have to make sure that they don't co-opt it. That they don't send in their agent provocateurs. That they don't send in their high-paid troublemakers. You know, like the Koch brothers said, hey, you know what? Like the fake Koch brothers said, hey, you want me to send in some troublemakers? And you actually had a sitting governor going, you know what? We thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
We thought about that. Scary, scary stuff. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend Stuart Akoff. He is on the ground in Ohio. It's going to be interesting to find out what's going on there in Ohio. Right back after this.
Let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave, make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Someone tell the GOP that Ohio's not for sale.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So I look at this post over at Democratic Underground. Botany put it up. They write, those no good lazy public workers. They saved my dad's life last night. Goes into the story about late last night, 9:45 p.m., their 83-year-old father was passed out at his desk. Their mother called 911, one of those public workers. And you know what happened? Couple of those public workers, those scourge of the earth, the people who were destroying the economy, the people who brought Wall Street to its knees, they showed up, they revived him, took him to the hospital, and you know what? He's going to be okay. To me, that's the thing that we need to be talking about. We need to be talking about what these folks, these firemen, these policemen, these public servants do for us every day, and the Republicans have pushed this conversation and have pushed this issue to the forefront. That's why I've asked Stuart Acuff, good friend, also the chief of staff and assistant to the president of the Utility Workers Union of America, come talk to us. He's going to be in Ohio this week. Stuart, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you, Rick. It's always good to be with you on your show.
You know,
where working people come to talk.
Yeah, I look at this and I go, you know, is this the fight that we want to have right now? Maybe not, but I think it's a fight worth having.
Yeah, I mean, there's some fights that you don't want to have, but you have to make it. And this is one of them, just like Wisconsin. Look, these state legislative fights against working people are national issues. They are not state issues. They are designed to weaken our political power, meaning working people's political power. They're designed to cut our membership. They're designed to destroy unions. They're designed to give the radical right wing and corporate America a free ride to power. And that's why these are so important for all of us.
But I thought it was an important tool to help local taxpayers save money. I mean, I keep,
Rick,
keep being
Rick,
told it's this wonderful tool.
I appreciate your irony and your humor, but let me tell you something. The Wall Street destroyed $5 trillion of America's wealth, and that included pension funds and 401k funds, and it strapped state governments because they had made obligations for pension funds and for retirement.
Yep.
And now, they destroyed $5 trillion with their recklessness, $50 trillion around the world. And now they want working people to pay for it. It is absolutely obscene and absurd. This is not our fault. It's not the fault of workers. It's not the fault of firefighters. It's not the fault of police officers, our school teachers, our social workers, our nurses' aides. It is the fault of a reckless Wall Street which was allowed to do whatever they wanted to do with our money and our nation's wealth. That's what people need to understand.
And
they destroyed $5 trillion of our nation's wealth, and they're now demanding that we pay for it.
And that's just not Stuart Akoff, chief of staff for an assistant to the president at the Utility Workers Union, saying that. That's also Republican mayor of Lancaster, Ohio, David Smith, saying that, who said it wasn't, it wasn't these firemen, it wasn't these policemen that caused the layoffs. It was John Kasich's budget cuts that caused these layoffs. It wasn't workers' rights. It was the economy that collapsed, and it was Kasich who went after them. In fact, this mayor from Lancaster, Ohio, this David Smith, a Republican, said, look, our experience was the unions were willing to open up their contracts and discuss shared sacrifice.
Absolutely.
And they were into that. They were willing to talk about shared sacrifice. What they were against was imposed slaughter, which is what Kasich and the Republicans wanted.
And what we're against is cutting off our voice. Workers need a voice in the decisions that affect their lives. In Wisconsin, Scott Walker gave $160 million of tax cuts to the wealthy and the corporations right after he was elected. Then he turned around and demanded $100 million of cutbacks from the public employee unions and public employee workers. They gave it to him, Rick.
Yep.
They gave it to him.
He created a crisis, and he still
jammed through legislation to destroy public employee bargaining.
Yep. You know, the reality is he created a crisis. They gave in, and he slit their throats anyway. And we were there in Wisconsin when it happened. In fact, we were sleeping in the Capitol the night it passed through.
Good for you, my brother. The night they rammed it through.
But, you know, here's the thing. You look at what's going on in Ohio, and number two, I think, is a perfect description of what SB 5 is.
Right.
I think that's the apropos number. Even right-wing talker Billy Cunningham, I think it's Billy Cunningham, right? Whatever his name is, he's against the bill. Why? Because it doesn't allow those workers to have a seat at the table, much as you just said. This is a right-wing, way out right-wing guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look. What we have across the northern Midwest and the Northeast is an effort to cut working people off at the knees. And you know, we can go down the list. Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Maine, all across the, where working people are the strongest, in an effort to cut working folks off at the knees so that the radical right wing can get absolute control of our economy and our nation. And that's what this fight is about. Look, if you're looking for a patriot, look for a working people in the northern Midwest and the Northeast.
Yeah, look for the people who are out there, you know, replacing power lines. Look at the people who are out there during these storms rescuing people.
Those are union workers who are replacing power lines and getting power back up and cutting down trees and rescuing other folks as EMTs and as firefighters and protecting our safety as police officers and teaching our kids as school teachers. How in the world did we get to a place in America where we blame the best amongst us for the country's problems when they have been so absolutely and blatantly created by the 1%, by the richest among us?
Yeah, I remember after 9/11, we couldn't love enough of the New York Fire Department. You couldn't send them enough love.
Right.
They were heroes and, boy, worshipped. Now that they actually want to be paid and make a decent living and maybe someday retire down the road, take care of their families, well, we need savings. And I love this frame, Stuart, that, you know, these wages that we took back, these states took back, somehow those are now savings. I see it as wage theft.
It is wage theft, and it's retirement theft. I mean, one of the reasons some people go into public service is because they give up wages now for retirement later. And now that the radical right wing, the radical Republican right wing, and which it almost includes almost all Republicans, you know, you can find a handful of decent Republicans in the Northeast, but it is wage theft and retirement theft, and it's unconscionable, and we can't allow it to happen. And that's why we're mobilizing as strong as we can in Ohio. And people, average people are beginning to get it. I mean, we've got a huge lead in the polls, but as you know, Rick, our challenge is always getting our folks who work every day. They work every Tuesday, out to vote. And that's why the utility workers are working so hard to make sure all of our 10,000 members and all of their family members and all of their neighbors and everybody they go to church with and everybody they're in the Elks or the Moose Club with or the VFW with goes to the polls to vote against SB 5 in Ohio.
Now, you look at this, and, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that this will be, you know, sent back, repealed. There's part of me that says, you know what, maybe if it doesn't get repealed, maybe we go back to where you have direct actions. And I look at what this former Republican Ohio Supreme Court Justice Andy Douglas said, who has been one of the leading voices to repeal issue number 2. He said that, you know, since the collective bargaining law passed back in 1984, since that time there have been no work stoppages. Up until that point, Ohio had led the nation and the number of work stoppages by public employees because, you know, in order to get collective bargaining rights, you know, they gave up something. This is part of the negotiation process.
As the Supreme Court Justice said, there was no process for solving disputes. And after they passed the public employee collective bargaining bill, there was a process.
Right.
And workers and unions were able to avail that process rather than a work stoppage.
So, you know, in looking at this, is this creating a whole nother problem for the unintended consequences that a lot of actions done hastily in the middle of the night come up with like this? Could this be an unintended consequence?
I really hope so, my friend. I really, really hope so. I hope that Americans see exactly what the agenda of the radical right-wing Republicans is. And that they understand that they threaten our voice, and what's more important than that, they threaten our democracy. It has never been shown that in an industrial or post-industrial society that you can maintain and sustain democracy without an organized workforce. And that's what America's unions are.
Well, I mean, give people who have a voice on the job generally use that voice in the political realm, and I think the radical right understands that. The more they can quell that voice, the more they can quash it, the more they can stick people in the corner and make them subservient, the more pliable they're going to be and easier to control.
That's exactly right, Rick.
So let me ask you.
That's what this fight is all about.
You know, as you see people marching in the streets, as you see these occupies around the country, here in
America. Isn't that a great movement?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Rick, I love this Occupy movement.
It's something we've been calling for years.
It's a real movement. It is spontaneity. You know, people rising up spontaneously. It has creativity. It has direct action. It's a beautiful, beautiful, sign of America's democracy, and we have to protect that. And nobody within the sound of your voice or my voice tonight should think that American democracy should be taken for granted or will always be here without us defending it.
Yeah,
America's history is a history of average people fighting for greater and greater freedom and social justice. And that's the side we're on. And I'm convinced we're going to win, but not if we don't fight for it and not if we don't work for it.
Absolutely. You know, I've been calling for, you know, ever since the day I started on the air, reliving the days of Coxey's army, the Bonas army, average everyday people, populist uprising, taking to the street and saying, hey, we demand to be considered. And that's what I'm seeing out of this.
And that's why I'm one of your biggest fans, because you have been calling for that every time since you got a voice on the airwaves. And all of America's trade unionists appreciate you and this program for helping to call the people to action and to do what it takes for the average Americans to protect our democracy.
I appreciate that, Stuart. And as we move forward to next Tuesday, we're going to be, I'm hoping we'll be in Columbus to cover the event there. Hope to see you. I don't know where you're planning on being, but hope
you
to see
will,
you there.
My brother. You will see me. I'm going to Ohio, and I'm going to where the folks on the ground tell me to go. I know I'm going to Columbus first, and then, we've got a major effort to mobilize all of our members and their families and their neighbors in Ohio, but I'm signing up as a foot soldier, and I'll be knocking on doors, staffing phone banks, licking envelopes, speaking at union meetings, speaking at precinct walks. I'm just going to be a foot soldier in the effort to save our democracy.
All right, and I hope to see you there while we're there.
Oh, you will, my brother. You will.
All right, Stuart, great talking to you, brother. Keep up the fight, and best of luck next Tuesday.
Thank you, my brother. Appreciate you and appreciate your show. Thank you for all you do, Rick.
Thank you.
You're a tribute to our movement.
I appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
A Washington decree. So here I stand with a long line of cars, everyone yelling at me. When did I become the problem? How did the fault become online? The president says, I'm tightening this belt. The only one that's tightening is mine.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
One 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So the Borowitz Report has reported Rick Perry waded into the brouhaha over the sexual harassment charges against Republican presidential rival Herman Cain, telling reporters if it turns out he's innocent, then he should be executed. Noting that the case against Mr. Cain was far from airtight, Governor Perry said, in Texas, we fried men for less than that. The Texas governor stopped short of saying that he would personally put Mr. Cain to death, but added, I'll tell you what, if I had to do it, I'd sleep like a baby that night. Sleep like a baby. While the sexual allegations against Mr. Cain gained traction, the former CEO was said to be huddling with his two closest advisors, Papa John and Little Caesar. So there you go, the Borowitz Report. Turns out, I don't know if you've been following this, but it turns out one of the people who, I guess, accused him of sexual harassment and was paid off, according to the Washington Post, her lawyer has asked the Restaurant Association to, well, to drop that that confidentiality clause, to drop that gag order, and allow this woman to come out and talk. And it'll be kind of interesting to see where this goes, because as this gains steam, and it's going to, I don't think this is going away, especially now that we find out that Herman Cain's wife, Gloria, is now going to do the whole stand by your man thing. Evidently, it's being reported that she's negotiating with the folks at Fake News on Fox to sit down with Greta Van Susteren, which seems to be the way it's kind of going to go for Friday night, and, you know, to kind of discuss it at length. And you go, well, why are you sending her out? What does she know? She wasn't the CEO of the Restaurant Association. She didn't know anything about it. Is this just a, you know, I stand by my husband kind of nonsense? And, you know, you look at this and you just kind of wonder, you know, it's insane. It's nuts. But here it is. You know, she's gonna sit down and do that whole Hillary Clinton thing. Sad. It's sad. Really is. But, you know, you look at the GOP field and there's really nothing there. I mean, it's crazier and crazier. It's almost like, and I can hear the conspiratorial people going, you know what? Obama done this. Yep, Obama, he set this up. He's behind it. He's funding all this insanity. Him and George Soros. Has to be. Because I don't know that you can find a more bizarre group of characters than the Republicans have put forth as their best and brightest. I mean, really, is this the best that the Republican Party has to offer? Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs? I mean, really, there's not a decent one among them. I mean, one is that much nuttier than the next. And did you see that video of Rick Perry?
Yeah, what was that?
That was him high on crack.
I was going to say, it looked like he, you know what it looked like? It looked like he was on about a three-day binge. He was drunk for 3 days.
I hope so.
He was just coming out of it. He was strange. He was, he just didn't look like him. Didn't sound like himself. I don't know if that's the new Rick Perry. If it isn't, he's in trouble. That's
all
I can
say. He's done. Pure and simple, he is done. And you know you're done when you plagiarize Rick Santorum. You know your campaign is in huge trouble when you're plagiarizing Rick Santorum.
And I'm for saying it loud and saying it proudly. We are the land of the free. Let's let America be America again and again be the land of the free. God bless you and thank you all for coming.
If you remember, originally, that was Rick Santorum's slogan, making America, America, again. And he realized that was a flopper. Now you've got Perry doing the exact same thing. We're going to make, let America be America again. You know you're done when you're plagiarizing Santorum.
Well, things are so bad that Newt Gingrich is actually coming up in the polls. He's hanging around and hanging around. I mean, think about how bad that is. The neuter is actually coming up in this field. Wow.
I mean, you look at the collapse of the Perry campaign. And, you know, I was actually afraid of him until he opened his mouth. I really thought he was a much more seasoned politician. I thought his handlers would put him in situations where he could control and, you know, they could at least do it like they did with Bush. They put him out there in limited venues, kept him on message.
I thought they could do that with Perry. Evidently not. Evidently this viral video, it is hysterical.
Well, I don't know if you've been following him close. If you listen to the people who have been following his career in Texas, you start to clearly get a picture of this guy who's the poster boy for selling government. He has come up with more ingenious ways to sell government than anybody I've ever heard. I mean, he's very, very good at it.
Well, I got to question the whole ingenious part, because, you know, I'm looking at him and I'm going, really? Oh, man.
Well, I don't know that that's, I say that facetiously. I don't know, obviously, what he's doing. It's nothing to admire, but, I mean, he's doing things that very few, if anybody, have done before. He's come up with new and let's just leave it at that, new ways to sell government.
Innovative ways to get into the taxpayer's pocket to profit for himself.
His rich friends.
I'll go along with that. But here's the thing, you know, he's running around the country saying that he had this great jobs plan, and you got Corbett here saying we want to be like Texas, because, you know, they're creating jobs. Well, here's the thing, a strong majority of people in Texas are saying Rick Perry had nothing to do with it. In fact, a poll by the University of Texas and the Texas Tribune found that 65% of the people polled said, look, it's the long-standing policies. It's the 25-year view of this state. It's the fact that we don't have a state income tax. And don't forget, we've got gas. We've got oil. We've got natural gas out the wazoo. And we have a drilling tax that fills the coffers. Unlike Pennsylvania, who has no drilling tax. Only 21% of the people polled said that Perry deserves credit for his strong leadership. 21%. I wouldn't say that's something to run for president on. And you look at this whole thing, and man, I don't know where it can go from here. I mean, I think they've reached the, and I'm hoping it gets worse. I'm hoping they go deeper off the end. But I don't know how much crazier it can get. Michelle Bachmann with her, you know, my flat tax has multiple levels. How do you do that? My flat tax has multiple levels, yes. But what about the flat tax? And Rick Perry goes, I got card. But if you have a flat tax, isn't the whole idea of the flat tax get rid of the IRS? Evidently not. Evidently nobody schooled these people on what. And again, it comes back to that thing of common language. Words have meaning, and evidently they don't get that. So you gotta laugh at it. So here, mark your calendars. The New Hampshire GOP primary, they're about ready to announce, gonna be January 10th, as I understand. So that'll be interesting. So there you go. Also, today, I don't know if you saw it, but the Reagan Presidential Foundation, they unveiled the 9-foot statue of former President Ronald Reagan at the Washington Airport that has his name, the $900,000, 900-pound statue right there at the what used to be Washington National Airport, is now, I think, going to be the home of a number of air traffic controllers and their dogs. I think that's going to be a new dog park right around the statue. In fact, Jim White has the tweet of the day saying, I presume that the president's statue unveiled at the National Airport today has him flipping the bird at the air traffic control tower. So there you go, a big statue. And again, you know, you got to give Republicans credit. When they honor someone, when they make a saint of someone, when they put them up on a pedestal, they really do it well. And they have put him everywhere. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Bob Lennox, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 495. Another victory. Back after this.
Provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says labor is very concerned about Congressional Supercommittee Medicare and Medicaid cuts in the hundreds of billions of dollars. The AFL-CIO Executive Council met Monday to plan a public campaign against the cuts. Trumka says working people have already made tremendous economic sacrifices, and labor won't stand for taking even more away from working people.
They've already given a lot. They've given their homes, they've given their jobs, they've given back in wages, while the rich have done better than ever. The middle class and the lower class have already given. It's time for the rich to give a little bit so that we can at least get back to balance. Working people will oppose any cuts to those essential programs, no matter who proposes them. And it should be a no-brainer that we will finally ask Wall Street and the super rich to pay their fair share.
The AFL-CIO is activating 700,000 online activists to oppose the cuts and is also partnering with progressive groups nationwide to fight the Medicare and Medicaid cuts. Connecticut Red Cross workers are set to strike on Thursday. Jesse Russell has more.
American Red Cross blood collection employees in Connecticut have been working without a contract for 2 years, and with no sign of an agreement on the horizon. Those workers are planning to strike on Thursday. Last weekend, the Red Cross rejected the most recent proposal put forth by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. While the strike will be open-ended, the organization says it doesn't expect to see a disruption of blood deliveries early in the strike action. The organization says it will wait until the strike begins to determine if it'll need to cancel any blood drives. The main issues holding up negotiations are differences in opinion regarding bargaining rights, scheduling, healthcare benefits, and employee input into staffing ratios. The union alleges that the Red Cross has substantially reduced the number of licensed nurses from 36 to less than 36, limiting the availability of licensed nurses at blood drives.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith. Come on, you good workers, good news.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there. Or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app and you can take your class war on the go. You can also email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all email personally. So if you remember back in July, we began talking about this situation out in California where BMW wanted to dump some, I think it was like 70 employees, kick them to the curb and bring in a third-party logistics company so they could outsource those jobs. They didn't want anything to do with those people who had been loyal employees for, well, I guess it was like 25, 30 years, a good number of them. But the union said, no, we're going to fight back. And it looks like victory. It looks like the union was able to, through some good pressure, through organizing and, well, getting out in the streets and pounding the pavement, it looks like they saved those jobs. Here to talk about that, Bob Lennox, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 495 out there, the union that represents those workers. Bob, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, how you doing, Rick?
You know, I look at this and I you know, great day. I mean, this is a victory for working people.
Yeah, it was a tremendous victory, and I think it was a real benchmark in these types of situations here in the country.
You know, without...
We have so many workers being confronted with the same type of thing. Their jobs being outsourced right here at home. These people stood up and won.
So let me ask you, how'd you do it? I mean, you know, the way it looked when we talked in July, that this was a done deal. They had the third-party logistics company already picked out. How'd you do this?
Well, it was a combination. It was really an international effort in conjunction with the General President's office and the Strategic Campaign Department and our members out there on the job and the support we got around the country at the dealerships and in port protests. There were protests held in 10 different ports in 11 countries. Excuse me, 10 countries, 11 ports. And it was just a combination of effort. It wouldn't have, you know, any one single thing wouldn't have done it. It was a combination of anything and everything that finally brought the company to the bargaining table. And we're able to achieve a breakthrough.
And I look at the contract. What is it, nine and a half year contract?
Well, the actual labor agreement, the first one is 5 years, but we have a written agreement from BMW that they guarantee the jobs and the employment in a union contract for 9.5 years. So I think that's the first.
That is fantastic. I mean, that... again, I go back to July when I think we spoke the first time, where this just seemed like it was a done deal, and it was just a matter of formality. And now to have this happen, again, you know, congratulations in order, but also to all the people who fought, stood up. This is a major win, I think.
Yeah, I think so, Rick. I think the story that needs to be told. I think this has become a model for global corporate campaigns in the future. It was very effective, and the results were great. We worked out the five-year deal includes 100% medical coverage, fully paid for by the company for 5 years. We got significant pension improvement. They stayed in the Teamster plan, got significant pension improvement over the 5 years. On the wages, they did take a wage reduction, but that doesn't go into effect till next September. And they go from $25 to $23.50, but they can earn that back plus an extra bike and a half on this performance grid. It's performance and quality combined. And looking at the grid, we took a hard look at it. Our members have hit those numbers 7 months out of the last 12, so they can easily do it. It's just a matter of staying focused and doing the job.
Right. You know, you look at BMW, as I understand, a German company, right?
Yes.
You know, what kind of support did you get from the unions overseas?
Well, we had phenomenal support from that European BMW Works Council, which is a consortium of European unions that have contracts directly with BMW, and the Unite, which is kind of like the UAW of England. They really stood up, pushed the European Works Council hard, and in fact, just before we had the major breakthrough at the bargaining table, we had planned a meeting in Munich where we were going to travel back there and make our case directly to the European unions there. And it was just about 10 days before that meeting when BMW was out here in California and they settled it. So, but we had to still work through all the details and we're just finalized. But it was all done.
That's fantastic. You know, I look at this, and as you said, I mean, this could be a model for how you deal with multinational corporations across this country, because I've seen numerous stories, and I think of the IKEA situation where the machinists were able to, you know, to enlist the folks in Sweden to, you know, to stand up and fight for the workers there. And I look at these multinational corporations who have done a masterful job of pitting workers in one country against each other. This is a great tale of bringing the workers together and actually fighting for both sides.
Absolutely, and I was so impressed with what I saw from our European counterparts, even in Australia. I mean, they really stood up, and they were communicating with the IBT and with our local direct, and it was an amazing experience. I'll never forget this whole process. It was really something.
I mean, because that's the only way you fight back against global capital is to be able to wherever it goes, to make sure that labor is respected. So let me ask you, you know, as people are listening to this program, you know, what do you want people to walk away from this with? Because, I mean, for me, the message is pretty simple. This is the reason that I collectively bargain. This is the reason I become part of a labor union, be it the Teamsters or anybody else. But right here, this is the reason.
This is it. This is the whole enchilada. And, you know, what you can walk away from this is exactly what you just said. There is value in being a union member. Being a Teamster, I'll have to plug the Teamsters Union, but all unions have value. But the Teamsters Union in particular really has phenomenal clout and tremendous international resources that they pull every lever to get this thing done, and it works.
Well, I wish you guys nothing but the best. Congratulations. You know, again, like I said, I was worried that this was the end of it. You know, when a company brings in those union busters like Jackson Lewis, generally what happens is something negative. But you guys have turned it around.
Well, it worked out, Rick.
I appreciate your time, Bob Lennox. And again, congratulate all your people. A fight well fought. And again, I think something that we'll be talking about for years to come. Thanks so much, Bob.
All right. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Rick.
You know, I look at this, and again, you know, we've talked about numerous cases where these big multinational corporations have pitted workers in one country against another, saying, well, you know, if you don't take these concessions, we're going to move somewhere else. And it's generally the U.S. companies who are doing it to American workers. This was a little different. This was a foreign company doing it to American workers. And we don't like it. I don't like it at all. I don't like workers being pitted against each other, and it's nice to see on an international basis people working together.
And many times you'll see that these foreign companies in their native lands, they get along with the unions because the unions have the power. And what does that tell you? That these foreign companies believe that and they're accurate, that the labor laws are weaker and they can come in and exploit workers, and they've tried over and over again.
And you look at the fact that you've got a Republican Party who wants us to have labor law in this country like China. They want us to be an exploitable country where labor is weak and it's exploitable. Well, you know what? Hey, in Republican world, BMW would have done, and there'd have been no say. It's done. The company decided, the benevolent corporation decided. There'd have been no grassroots campaign. There'd have been no fighting back. There'd have been, if you don't do it, we don't give you a severance package or you don't get unemployment. We fire you right now. That's what we would have gotten. Let's take a quick break. Great story, and I'm glad Bob Lennox came on and talked to us. Great story. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Lawsuits and arraignments, members under company surveillance. Public divided either they love us or they hate us. Profit billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have flipped into a cap.
But we never give up.
We'll be here one day longer.
One day longer.
The people's voice is stronger.
The people's voice is stronger.
We want to draw money, we will talk with respect. Keep fighting for these rights for generations that's next. One day longer.
Class Radio Experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
America's power elites on Wall Street and Washington have been stunned by the sudden surge of the Occupy movement. Some 600 U.S. communities have Occupy groups, thousands of middle-class people have taken to the streets, and recent polls show that nearly 6 out of 10 Americans support what the protesters are saying and doing. Why is this happening, wail Wall Street bankers, CEOs, and their pet politicos? What is upsetting all these people? You'd think that the super-rich could afford to buy a clue, but apparently not. So, to help them grasp the situation, I've gathered a mess of news clips from just the past few weeks that pretty much spells it out for them. They needn't read the actual stories, just scan the headlines. Better yet, I'll do it for them. No need to thank me. I'm always delighted to edify the rich. Headline, slumping wages, rising health costs cause strain. Top earners double share of nation's income. Snapshot of poverty surge in the suburbs. Banks to make customers pay debit card fee. Record high 4.5 million have not worked in a year or more. House GOP spending plan cuts money for job training. U.S. income levels sink, leaves fragile consumers in a bind. Outsized severance packages continue for executives. More new poor going hungry. Banks are awash in cash. Bank of America to cut 30,000 jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, even a Wall Street banker ought to be able to understand the message that these headlines are delivering. Such daily headlines reveal the depth of inequality and rank injustice that's propelling the Occupy uprising. As we say in Texas, even a dog knows the difference between being stumbled over and being kicked. America's middle class and the poor are tired of being kicked, and now they're kicking back. This is just the start. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
All because the gays are getting married. That is why people die and children go unfed. When I'm sad and alone and I'm wondering just why everything about my life is feeling like it's going down the toilet bowl. You've got to know it's cause the gays.
All the world's problems. The tornadoes, the global warming, everything. The bunions. The blister I got on my heel this weekend, roller skating, all of that, it's because of the gay people. Well, at least that's what the radical right wants you to believe. And I saw an interesting headline in one of the UK papers, kind of caught my eye. Evidently, they're saying that school children who are bullied, they should act less gay. And, you know, there's part of me that goes, is that really the advice that you want to be telling kids? Me, personally, I'm not as hung up on the bullying thing as everybody else seems to be. We want anti-bullying everything. And I think part of it is that we don't want people to be able to solve problems. To me, being a kid and someone, you know, you having those problems, you need to work through that stuff. What happens when this generation of kids gets in their 20s, 30s, 40s? What happens? And they're unable to deal with their problems themselves. And they're unable to solve those problems. I worry about that. Which is why I tell my kids, don't put up with anybody's nonsense. You don't go running and telling the teacher. You don't go running and telling. You deal with your problems. But again, I guess that's just my old school mentality. I guess that's not chic today. Today everything is, well, no, dude, stop bullying. Amazing stuff. Chick-fil-A. You ever been to Chick-fil-A, Jake?
No, I haven't.
Good. You shouldn't. In fact, I would never go to Chick-fil-A. And I'm sure for a whole plethora of reasons, being their support of radical right-wing policy. The other one being in 2009, they gave a bunch of these anti-gay groups $1.7 million, to go after folks. What I find interesting about that is, you know, these are the people who, you know, they're the National Christian Foundation. You know, they believe in Christian principles and the Campus Crusade for Christ and all these other groups that they've sent boatloads of money to, who are basically the Family Research Council, who are basically anti-gay groups. And personally, I don't really care what people consenting adults do within the confines of their own home. But I do have a problem with, like, this university in Georgia. Shorter University, which I'm trying to figure out. Shorter, really? Is that really the name of your university? Did you come up with that on your own? Not quite getting it. You got a rationale for Shorter University? Maybe the time difference? I don't know. But anyway, they've asked their 200 employees to sign a personal lifestyle statement rejecting homosexuality, adultery, and premarital sex. And again, you kind of wonder. Those who don't sign it, will they lose their jobs? I mean, because I wouldn't sign it. Again, you know, I go back to this idea that, you remember back to the days of liberty of contract where they had these yellow dog contracts where they said, here, sign this, hey, you're never going to join a union. And that was law. Now we're moving in a direction where I've got to tell you what I do in the confines of my four walls, and if you find out or it's rumored otherwise, I can be fired? Is that what we want? I sure as hell hope not. But in addition to the pledge not to be gay or not to cheat on their wives or have premarital sex, they've also banned bacon, non-dairy creamer, polyester blend undergarments, and dill pickles. I would imagine the dill pickles are because it reminds them of being gay. So there you go. Really kind of scary. I mean, it's really scary how the radical right wing has taken into our lives. And I look at this, and I've been talking about this for years. Abortion's never been my big issue. I'm never going to have one. I'm probably more pro-life than not. Actually, I'm pro-safety. If my daughters ever got into a situation like that, I would want them to be safe first. Whatever they choose, that's their choice between them and their conscience. But I look at all of these laws around the country that are really working very hard to outlaw abortion across the country. And this Mississippi ban that they're trying to ram through, in fact, it's initiative number 26, going to be on next week's ballot. The personhood amendment run by the folks at Personhood USA. What I find interesting is the little slip of tongue that happened on this Diane Reams show, which I guess is on NPR. This guy was asked, you know, is this going to do anything, about birth control? And he says, well, you know, any birth control that ends the life of a human being will be impacted by this measure. So she says, you know, what about IUDs? What about birth control pills? And he says, well, if it falls into that same category, yes. So the ambiguous nature of the language, as I've been saying for the longest time, Roe versus Wade is not the goal line. That's just getting you to the red zone. The goal line is Griswold. The goal line is taking away your right to prevent pregnancies. And I stop and I think about, we're at 7 billion people in this planet. 7 billion. The radical right would want that to be 10 or 20. Without thinking, man, what the hell are you doing? But we can't feed them. Because what would Jesus say? And we can't clothe them, and we can't make sure that everyone has health insurance. We can't make sure that people have housing or food. No, can't do that. That's socialism. But demanding that they have to procreate? I got a problem with that. I mean, I got a problem with this whole invasion in people's lives. Look, you can be against abortion, and it's you know, when you hear the stories about late-term abortion, yeah, I'm with you. That's horrible. It shouldn't be done. But here's the thing. Preventing it up front, now somehow that's going to be a crime? What happens to that 13-year-old boy when he discovers, hey, if I do this fast enough, something goes out? Is that now a crime, too, because you wasted it? Eventually, watch, you mark my words, eventually these insaniacs are going to get to that point. Because that's the goal. And that's always been the goal. You know, because it can never be enough. We can't find rational ground. It's like the NRA people. You can't find national ground. You can't find a rational position. There's nothing. There's no way of making an agreement. For them, it's nothing. And then it goes to the ultimate extreme. Okay, you have the right to own a gun. Well, I want to conceal it. Okay, you got the right to conceal it. No, I want to wear it on my holster so everyone can see what a big tough person I am that I have a gun. Oh, okay, you can do that. Oh, but I want to walk down the street twirling them. I mean, when does it end?
No, I've talked to people who belong to the NRA, just as you said, and they are really dyed-in-the-wool NRA people. And you talk about, well, the gun ban. Well, they said, why shouldn't I be able to own an Uzi? Now, for those of you who don't know, the Uzi is an Israeli military gun. It's supposedly the fastest gun in the world. It's a military weapon designed to kill as many people in as short a time as possible. And then when you talk to these people, they say, well, what if I want to target shoot? Why would you want to target shoot with an Uzi?
Well, what if I want to target shoot with a SAM? Get me a surface-to-air missile. Why can't I have one of those? I mean, where does it end? And you're right. With those folks, it never ends. It's always the next. And this is going to be the same thing. Mississippi will probably pass this, this initiative 26 into law. And now you will have this personhood amendment, which will say that every human being from the moment of fertilization, cloning or functional equivalent thereof, now they're people, they have constitutional rights. So, you know, I'm not quite sure who's going to then define this. I would assume right from the start, Plan B, the morning after pill, is now going to be immediately illegal because its intent is to stop that right from the beginning, which to me, again, seems like rational positioning. Seems reasonable to me. You know what? You may be against the 12-week thing. You may be against the 20-week thing, whatever it is. I can understand that. But stopping it at the cellular level, stopping it at the day it happened, seems to me to be rational. But you cannot even have that discussion with these people. And that's what's scary. These are the folks who are running our government. And it's not just abortion, it's every issue.
And what is scary, Rick, they always approach it on the religious and moral issue. But if you talk about, okay, what about the children that, you know, that are born?
Oh, you're
that aren't being taken care of. What obligation do we have? What religious obligation do we have? Well, no, that should be left up to the parents or the church to take care of them. Shouldn't be the government involved at all. And you can go on issue after issue after issue. They have tunnel vision and they use religion when it suits them.
Yeah, so I look at this and again, I'm scared that these kind of people are the ones who are the most politically active and the most politically motivated. And that average everyday people who are struggling to get by, who are on the treadmill going to work every day, busting their behind, trying to make ends meet, they got their heads down and they're just working, trying to make it. And they're not paying attention to this stuff. And eventually we're going to wake up, and as the one guy emailed me who was abroad for 20 years, he said, I came back to a country that I did not recognize. And I'm starting to look around, and I'm seeing things happen that I don't recognize. You know, when you talk about infrastructure spending, and somehow that is a partisan issue, building the road for me to get to work on and you to get to work on, somehow that's partisan.
Or worse, socialism.
Yeah, and it's socialism. We should have a private for-profit corporation. And I came up with the perfect idea. We should sell advertising. Every seam of concrete should have a big advertisement on it. It might do a couple of things. It might help repair our roads, and it also might get drivers to put their eyes back on the road. Instead of, you know, fiddling with the texting thing and fiddling with the phone and the makeup eating soup and, you know, having your croissant, maybe people will put their eyes back on the road. Just a thought. But at the end of this, when you're talking about infrastructure spending, and we cannot decide on that, when all reputable sources are saying that we're crumbling, that there were trillions of dollars behind, there's a serious problem. And, you know, you look at our energy problems. You know, solar may not be the complete answer, but it's a part of it. And the fact that we refuse... the right is refusing to invest in it. It scares me. Same thing with geothermal. Same thing with wind power. Those are alternatives. Helps us get off of the dirty stuff. Doesn't it seem rational when other countries are investing huge amounts of money into it to be that country that becomes energy independent? And I look at these closures of these refineries. Again, to me, a national security issue, something we should be looking very closely at. Our energy needs, and you go back to Carter, say whatever you want about Carter. He got it. That 20% number he kept talking about back in 79, that was strategically chosen. That 20% is what we got from OPEC. And if we could take that away, they could keep their oil. At the time, if we weren't buying it, nobody else really was going to. And it would have driven the price down through the floor, but they knew they had us. Why? Well, because of the backdoor deals that the Reagan administration, and nobody's going to convince me otherwise, that they made. Which is why during his administration we had cheap oil, because of the agreement he had with the Saudis. But here again, oh, you're beating up on poor Ronnie, who we just built a big monument to, a 9-foot, $900,000 monument to the... Well, not going there. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back after this. Then it all crashes down, and you break your bound.
working class majority. Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So it has been the Herman Cain train all day. What has Herman done? What will he do? Some are saying, well, you know, this could make him presidential. Now he's got a sex scandal under his belt, make him like all the other politicians. We shall see. Here to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and across the globe, our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, I think the most amazing thing is that $250,000 to $300,000 of new money came into him because of this. And he does not seem to be particularly stung by this.
No, he's
the award that comes out.
He still has the ability to deny it. I saw a report that one of the women who was one of the accusers is now asking to be released from the confidentiality clause to actually come out and talk about it. Not sure which way that goes, but the more he denies it, the more maybe he's setting himself up for if there really is something out there.
Well, yes, and I mean what he should have probably said initially is, look, there's absolutely nothing here. But I decided to make, and this restaurant association decided to make a business decision. It would cost more to fight this in court, so we just paid money.
So do you
that
put...
was a business decision I made.
Yep.
If he had done that, he might have had a chance of it not being the story that it is today.
And now he's got to have his wife come out and, do the stand by her man thing.
Well, we've seen that many times before.
Yeah, well, you know, but he's a different kind of politician, and I got to be honest, I was kind of expecting a different kind of response. But
well,
we shall see.
It was clearly mishandled. And I know some people that work internally in the Cain campaign.
Yeah, they've got to be really, really freaking out over this because this cannot do anything but harm his run. I guess they're now finally, after all this time, New Hampshire coming around to maybe a date.
Yes, it looks like it is the 12th of January. We're expecting that you will, of course, be there, and then you can really have the show of the lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking forward to it. The 12th? Are you sure it's not the 10th?
Did I say the 12th? I mean the 10th.
Yeah. No, that's
Tuesday the 10th.
That's what I've written down on my calendar. We are looking forward to going up to New Hampshire and covering this. I would love to be able to sit down with the man, the legend, Mr. Cain and his train. I guess they've already announced presidential debates. They don't even know who the Republican's going to be. They've got dates already.
They do have dates. And let's see. I'm not going to memorize the dates. I think you have them. But one is going to be in Florida. The first one is in Denver. And one at Hofstra University, which did it last time. Very unusual that a university gets to hold debates twice.
No, maybe Bill Cosby will be there. They're hoping for the draw, maybe. That's all I can think of. Today, Henry Kissinger was weighed in on what's going on in Afghanistan.
Well, yes, he did. And one of the things he said is, well, it's sort of similar to Vietnam in that the American people basically don't have the stomach for it, which is absolutely true.
Well, I mean, could it be that right from the beginning we were lied to, that, this is going to be a quickie thing, it wasn't going to cost anything, we'd be in, we'd be out, we'd be seen as liberators, not occupiers, all of those things ring a bell?
Absolutely, and also, the other thing is, of course, The Defense Department is now admitting, I don't know why it's taken them so long, although they have said a few things along the way, that the biggest problem is the back-and-forth shared border in the federally tribal-administered areas of Pakistan because people go back and forth to the border.
And I just don't see there any way of changing that. I mean, the Pakistanis are not going to, I don't think they're going to secure that border no matter what we do.
No, they're not. And I somewhere in my files, I have a picture of a Taliban flag that my cousin took right over the border when he was embedded with the military there. I mean, it was just there in plain sight. Nobody cared about it.
Yeah, I mean, this was a losing battle the day we stepped into it. I mean, if history shows us anything, Afghanistan, nobody, I mean, it's just not possible.
Right.
Especially when you do it in the way that we did it, you know, kind of not even really, I don't know. I'm frustrated over the whole thing. I'm angered over the whole thing. We've lost too many lives, too much treasure, for what? For people who don't want us there and hate us even more now.
Exactly.
Let's move on. Evidently, the Obama administration with the State Department pulling some money out of the UNESCO?
Yes, they're definitely pulling money out of UNESCO. And they say that, look, this Palestinian trying to get around the General Assembly issue or the Security Council issue of becoming a country admitted to the United Nations without the peace process was unacceptable. And so they pulled out their pledge. And, I think the United States is the highest pledge maker to UNESCO.
Yeah, as I said about this, you know, it's amazing. I didn't realize we were spending so much money on education and science as we were globally. Because I don't know, do we spend that much money here at home on education and science?
Well, actually, I think we do. But again, it's a lot more than one would expect. It's interesting. Does the United Nations really? Doesn't deliver for us on that particular issue. They do deliver for us in other areas. But UNESCO, question mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Today, I guess a monumental day, if you will. A constitutional amendment introduced today?
Yes. The question is whether there's going to be a constitutional amendment that essentially deals with this issue of money in politics. And Chuck Schumer and some other folks have said, look, there was a bad decision on Citizens United. There was another decision before that. And this has paved the way for money equals politics. I mean, money equals free speech.
Yep.
And we want to stop it because it is subverting the process within the United States.
Well, it goes back to the Buckley Viejo case back in the 70s. $1, one vote, I guess, is the actually, they said money, you know, basically is free speech covered under the First Amendment. I'm like, well, $1, one vote? Is that where we're heading? And if you look at all the money that's spent on advertising and all the money that's spent manipulating the electorate, I think it's almost that. $1, one, a whole boatload of money, one vote?
It's a lot of money, and it's a lot of money in politics, and particularly when you see what Karl Rove is doing, it's very scary.
I mean, what's really sad is you look at what's going on, and especially look at Wisconsin. The one guy there, Malin Mitchell, one of the guys who, the firefighter out there who we know, said that Governor Walker, they're expecting him to raise $70 million to run a gubernatorial, race if they recall him. $70 million. If we've got $70 million to elect a governor, we should have a whole boatload of money for education.
We certainly should. Is that really what they're saying? The Walker recall is going to cost?
That's what they're saying. He's going to be able to raise himself, Walker. $70 million. I almost choked.
Wow.
I almost choked when I first heard that.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, wow. But, you know, this is what happens when you have unlimited amounts of money going into campaigns. And evidently there in Wisconsin during the recall, it's open season. I guess they don't have the laws in there. So I'm of the mindset that we go back and we say that, sorry, Mr. GE and Mr. ExxonMobil, you're not people. You can't participate in the political process. Sorry, just people. They're the ones that participate, not corporations.
Well, you know, people are corporations are people is going to be taken up again by the Supreme Court. And it should be interesting because what are they going to do? They've already taken us down this huge road.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, when Rick Perry executes one, maybe I'll let them be a person. But that's not going to happen.
I love that.
Yeah, I don't know where I came up, where it came from, but that makes sense to me. The debt reduction thing, the secret super duper panel. I'm not hopeful.
I'm not hopeful either. And I mean, today they heard from the sort of bipartisan group of people talking about how they have to get partisan politics out of it. Well, I don't think they need a testimony to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you come together and find common ground when you've got Boehner saying, well, you know, compromise isn't giving up on your principles, and so basically we're never going to raise taxes. We've already told you that. So where's the compromise?
Well, there isn't a whole lot of compromise, and that's very, very clear. I don't see it happening. But on the other hand, the debt commission people have some incentive, Rick, because if they were trying to get seats on that were harder than getting, you know, seats at a major football game or what's that called, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But they can't, these 12 people, go home and say to their constituency, I absolutely accomplished nothing.
I mean, good point, but at the end of the day, they can go back and say, the Democrats weren't willing to move, and they're evil, and they wanted to raise your taxes. As with the Democrats, I thought, caved considerably with some of the things that they proposed. I mean, I got to be honest, I really thought that
I thought they caved, too.
And way too early. I mean, if you sit down at a bargaining table and you begin to negotiate, you don't throw out what you're willing to accept. You throw out what you hope to keep, and then you negotiate from there. Shows me that Democrats need a little union help, maybe.
They could use a lot of union help.
And lastly, as we move through the month of November, we're seeing another cliff scenario coming up as we look at these budget bills. What's going on?
Well, they turn into a pumpkin. The entire budget turns into a pumpkin on the 18th of November. And the question is whether this omnibus bills, which now have been broken into three mini-bus bills, are going to pass, and whether we're going to have a budget. I just don't know.
Yeah, I guess we've got another hostage situation coming up right before Thanksgiving.
Yes, you got it.
Looking forward to it. Maybe the turkey we can – never mind. Never mind. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. I appreciate your time. Always great talking to you.
Thank you.
All righty, now to find out what's going on across the street. What do you got for us tonight, Jay?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Very controversial article in Harrisburg. Apparently, the redistricting, the results have been come out, and a local senator by the name of Pakola, who has been intricately involved in the city takeover by the state government. Apparently, the Republicans on the redistricting process saw fit to remove Harrisburg from his district. Now, why is that important? Well, Harrisburg right now is, by a pretty good margin, a heavy Democratic-leaning city. The last time he ran for election in 2008 against his Democratic opponent, he literally carried none. He carried zero voting districts in Harrisburg. And now they want to remove him from the jurisdiction of Harrisburg and put him in a more rural Republican area of another county. Now the Democrats, Senator Costa reacted angrily. He said this is clearly done to protect an incumbent senator who had a hard time, and he did. He won by a razor-thin margin, 2008. It's clearly done to protect him in the next election, which will be 2012. I mean, of course, he denied it. He said he had nothing involved in it. He tried to use the plausible deniability. The truth is that he technically didn't make a choice, at least not publicly, but we all know that the leadership knew what was going on, and what they're doing is really exactly why a lot of people right now have a low opinion of politics. I mean, it's obvious that they use the redistricting procedures to protect an incumbent who was in danger of losing his seat. And by the way, I think he there was a very good chance in 2010-12 election that he in fact would lose, because there's a lot of angry people at what the man has done. Pennsylvania is about to become the 42nd state to have laws which ban texting. The state senator voted 45-5 to approve changes in the legislation that was made in the House, including a provision that makes texting while driving a primary offense, meaning police can stop a driver for no other reason if observed to be texting. The bill will go to the governor's desk. It will incur a fine of about $50. Now, opponents say that it will be an infringement on personal liberty, and it will possibly cause more accidents. Now, I listened to their explanation, and their reasoning for say that is they're saying, well, you know, if you ban texting, what they'll do is put the phone in their lap, and they'll just look down at their lap, make it even more dangerous. Well, that's an even more of a reason to make sure that that fine is a little bit more than $50. I think it should be more than $50 if they're going to make it effective. I mean, the supporters say, look, it makes a lot more sense to pass a statewide ban instead of the hodgepodge local system that we have now. Representative DePasquale, who's actually, he's a Democrat from York County, has been pushing this legislation for 5 years. He said it is a shame that this hadn't been passed earlier. It would have saved lives, and he said he wants to go on and thank the governor. However, although it passed, I really do believe for it to be effective, that fine should be a little bit more.
I say we also ban radios, cell phones altogether. Children, take children out of the car. Get those distractions out of the car. In fact, take passengers out of the car. Rear-view mirrors out of the way so you can see what's in front of you. Take fast food restaurants, all the drive-thrus, close those, because we can't have distractions while we're driving the car. And by all means, get the children out, because children are the biggest distraction of all. I think this is just an enormous waste of time. We should be talking about how we get people back to work instead of this. Create jobs. Jeez, oh, man. I mean, why aren't people in the pitchforks in the streets? Oh, they are. There are people in the streets. Create jobs. Enough of this. Jeez, oh, man.
Well, I understand what you're saying, priorities, but I really do believe. Well, I forgot to mention, Rick, that
if you can't text and you can't do it, don't do it.
There were about three people who died because of direct involvement of people texting. I personally believe it.
How many people died because somebody was talking to their, smacking their kid in the back? Get the kids out, too. In fact, what we should do is in the driver's seat, we should have it completely quarantined off from everything else. There should be no sound, no wind, no light, nothing. In fact, why don't we ban the sun? How many accidents happen because people can't see because of the glare of the sun?
I understand your.
It's
I understand.
Ridiculous.
Well, I understand your position. This is one issue we're gonna disagree. I do believe that it's a safety issue. That's just me. I mean, I see it all the time, and I cringe when I see it. I mean, people have their eyes off the road. It's just simple. You know.
Well, we should you especially with the cell phone, Mister. I'm gonna put my arm over my head and do some contortionist thing that you do. We should ban that.
In some cities, it already is banned, Drake.
In fact, we should have huge fines. Every time I see you with your hand over your head doing that weird contortion thing you do, in fact, they should arrest you for that. Because not only are you concentrated on your arm and this and that,
I would agree.
You can't see anything.
If you're going to listen, if you're going to use a cell phone, it should be Bluetooth. I would agree with that. There we can.
No. Can't have that because you can't possibly concentrate on driving and talk to somebody. And that's why you need to get the radios out, because radios are really a distraction. Especially, have you ever seen those people driving down the street singing the song? They don't even know anybody's around them. So we should do away with that, too. I mean, if you're going to do
it. What are we going to outlaw? Are we gonna outlaw going to outlaw crazy drivers?
Let's do it all.
Are we going to outlaw crazy drivers?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're, if we're gonna figure this out, let's do it.
Well, I understand, and we've taken a lot of time. I understand that you can't legislate every problem we have in the highway, but I do believe that this has been killing some people. That's just me. I mean, I think it's a very relatively minor law. I think that was overdue.
Yeah, and smoking, too. We should ban smoking because people die from... Oh, yeah, more people die from smoking than anything else. Why don't we deal with that first? Now we're going to worry about somebody texting. Jeez.
Well, when you talk about smoking...
And
you
how are you going to enforce it?
You bring up a legitimate
how are
argument.
Are you going to enforce it?
Why is marijuana outlawed and smoking isn't?
Because the tobacco lobby is much more powerful.
Exact mundo.
But you know, here's the thing. How are you going to enforce me texting? How are you going to do it? And is there anything in the law that says I can't take pictures? No. So I can take pictures with my cell phone. Nothing in the law about that.
Wrong. If you're in a city, wait a minute. If you're driving in a city, and there are some, because I live near one, that bans the use of cell phones, yes, it would ban.
It's not a cell phone. It's a camera.
It's a camera in your cell phone.
I'm not talking on the cell phone. I'm taking a picture with it.
It says use of cell phone. It doesn't specify.
So if I've got my wife's camera, that big monstrosity, can I then take pictures?
That's a good question.
See how dumb this law is?
Yes,
dumb.
I understand where you're going with
this. Just plain stupid. Another one of these ridiculous infringements that unenforceable and ridiculous. Just plain dumb. And leave it to the Democrats to screw something. Go get a jobs bill.
I think we can agree on that. One last story. I'll do this quick since we took up a lot of time on the other one. The AFL-CIO yesterday had a press conference. They're going to be launching a campaign and gearing up with their 700,000 online activists, tell Congress that the proposals by both Republicans and Democrats on the budget deficit super committee to slash benefits is simply unacceptable. If you want to be part of that effort, and ironic what we're going to be talking about here, you can text. It's still legal.
We'll do it while you're driving.
You can text.
And don't listen to me either. Just pull over to listen to me. Sit on the side of the road. I'm really dangerous. Listening to this program and driving is dangerous.
You can text DEBT, D-E-B-T, 235-246. Let me repeat that. You can text DEBT, D-E-B-T, 235-246 if you want to send a message to your lawmakers. Rich Trumka came up with some proposals, and we've talked about a bunch of these, and I quickly want to go over them. He suggested five things, a series of progressive tax revenues that would certainly go a long way in easing the debt. Surtax on millionaires, number one. Taxing capital gains as regular income, absolutely. Allowing Bush area tax cuts for the rich to expire. And here's one that we have been pushing for years, Rick, especially you, a small financial transaction tax. And last but not least, ending tax breaks for corporations that send jobs overseas. This, along with the help of health care, we can improve health care and bring down the cost of health care by allowing Medicare to negotiate drug costs with pharmaceutical firms, allowing the reimportation of prescription drugs, and establishing a public health care option. All of these are fantastic proposals.
No.
Can we get them through Congress?
No.
That remains to be seen.
Let's not do that. Let's ban texting. That's so much more that's better than a jobs bill or rational taxes. No, let's just ban texting. Let's take a quick break back after this. Jeez.
We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the hell
wins. Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this safety bill of rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or were likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw
reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, cause I got high. Because I got high.
Yeah, actually, that's perfect music for the last two stories I've got today. Perfect, right? Excellent, excellent choice to our executive producer, Brett. Gold star for you. Amy Winehouse, drunk herself to death. They are putting out a new album. She is releasing a new album of previously unreleased material. It's called Lioness Hidden Treasures. You can look for it hitting the stores December 5th, just in time for the Christmas holiday. And give it to the one that you love. Make sure that you don't drink too much. 5 times the legal limit, her blood alcohol level. No wonder she's dead. I think someone should have told her, hey, honey, stop it.
I guess my question is, how can someone consume that much, you would think?
Practice.
About twice as much you think she'd pass out.
Practice.
Wow.
Practice. If you remember our second story, if you remember Rush Limbaugh back years ago, he sent his nanny out to go get basically buckets full of Oxycontin. Practice. Somebody said he was taking, I don't know, like 10 or 15 of them a day. Practice. You get used to it. Evidently, there's a lawsuit going on in Texas, and it might be one of those things that kind of made me laugh. This woman was arrested. You got to love Texas, though. She was arrested for driving on the shoulder. Her car broke down on the side of the road. She got arrested for driving on the shoulder. Bright cops. So she was released, sent out. She is now suing for false arrest, for one, and for torture. Turns out that they forced her to listen to hours of Rush Limbaugh. And I got to be honest, pure torture, in my opinion. This woman, very, very not happy. So I guess, who would you sue if you were forced to listen to bad radio? Who do you go after? What court do you go to? I don't know. But I find it interesting, and I'm going to try and keep track of this story. Because, now you wonder, is this the tactics of the Texas police? Torturing their inmates with Limbaugh? Like I said, perfect song for that. Anyway, I want to thank our guest, Donna Cooper, senior fellow at the American Progress Action Fund, Laura Clausen from Daily Co's Labor, our friend Stuart Akoff from the Utility Workers Union, and also Bob Lennox from Teamsters Local 495. Thank you for being here. And hey, don't text or breathe or talk to the kids or listen to the radio or pick your nose. None of that. It's bad. See you tomorrow night.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like a tide flood beneath the
over sway, imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country.
Happened, Lottie in the chat room, Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, my head writer, David in Tennessee, John Fox, who maintains the website and all the technical gizmodery around here, and Ben Birch, without whom there would be no...